Who's afraid of sunburns?
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling.
5:10 now. Hi, how are you? Oh, too much stuff going on. I don't have time for this show.
Yes, I'm going. Do you mean news or in your life?
No. News. You know. Right. My life. If we do my life, I'm done by 6:12.
Is the biggest news that you're grappling with is that Steve Grzanich's new oven can now cook regular food from the store?
Is that it?
Is that right?
I heard that breaking news on the opening bell.
I mean, that's exciting, but I did not know that.
Yeah,
I thought it renders Steve's Christmas present useless.
Yeah,
right?
Because...
No. It just makes it better. It actually enhances it. So I can go to Trader Joe's and get a frozen, any of their pre-prepared meals.
Wow.
Did you hack it? What'd you do?
No, it's the barcode. So all I have to do is scan the barcode, and it knows exactly what it is and cooks it for the exact appropriate time.
Is this the greatest oven you've ever had?
It is, absolutely.
What's it called?
It's the Tovala oven.
Tovala.
T-O-V-O-L-A. Tovala.
It's less than $500, right?
Actually like $350, I think.
Yeah. So, and you get nothing for saying that, by the way.
Nothing at all.
At 6:11, we got to jump right to the top six at 6, and welcome back.
From the Steve Cochran Super Auditorium, Joe's here.
Yeah.
Hotel. It's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top six at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
If the season ended today, I'd like it to, the Blackhawks would be in the playoffs. They're going to be fine. They're going to be fine. We'll get to that in a second. First off, welcome back, Super Joe. This is a bonus item on the top six for 6. I've known Super Joe now for at least 5 years, maybe longer. He is the only one on this show I really trust. The rest of you people, I really can't trust at all.
It's rightful.
And especially Pete Zimmerman.
Wow.
With this whole made-up crime thing about produce being dropped on his front desk.
Yeah, he's staging it. He's staging.
Yeah.
It's a hoax.
That day to bring that up, I suppose. Anyway, Super Joe, you're the kind of guy I would think would never miss work. So I bet you were going crazy in the last 3 days because you were homesick.
Yeah, I tried to power through on Monday. I had to pull over on 290 to...
get sick on the side of the road.
Yep.
Ooh, on an expressway.
Oh, man.
Yep. And then you went home and you've been sick for 3 days. Your fever's gone. You're back at work. What are the chances you're still contagious?
I'd say pretty low. My mom works in a pediatrician's office. She said I was good to go.
What if she just wanted to get you out of the house?
That's definitely a possibility, no doubt about it.
But how are you feeling? On a 1 to 10, 10 being perfect, how do you feel?
Well, things were going really well, and then Manny Machado made a bad decision, and I was talking to Ralph on the big white phone again.
Item number one is this. Jussie Smollett's in custody. Jussie Smollett has been arrested and taken into custody by the Chicago Police Department. The Empire actor has been charged with felony disorderly conduct for allegedly staging a hate crime.
Wow.
This is kind of where a lot of people expected it to go. This is why you don't jump so quickly in either direction. And hopefully we'll all learn a lesson from this. Pause. Oh, that's right. None of us learned a lesson from this. And when
I mean, it's still alleged. He's, obviously innocent until proven guilty. But it's just, I think the emotion is anger from a lot of Chicagoans who, there's at least he's an equal opportunity offender. It could be whether it be politics and right-wing politics and Make America Great Again slurs that he said were thrown at him. Or on the other side, just our city, Chicago, which has a national reputation of violent crime. And he kind of took that and made it seem like we were just a wild, wild west. And he ran our city through the mud. I don't know. I'm angry all over the place.
Well, this is one disturbed dude. I don't know what you get out of this other than the end of your career.
Again, it's alleged. So you're like, I guess we put an if in front of everything. But it's like, wow.
Yeah, the police don't go around arresting people without pretty
good
reason.
Grand jury, right?
Yeah.
So it's not even the police.
There's a lot of evidence.
I mean, if you had him in here, what would you ask him other than why? Why did you do
that's
that?
That's it. Why?
Right.
Yeah. Why?
Yeah. I have a follow-up question, too. Maybe we'll do this like 3 days from now, but you watch the video of the two brothers buying all this stuff at the Crafty yep. Beaver. Mm-hmm. At what point does a hardware store say, the stuff you're buying kind of looks like you're up to no good? Like,
well, you know, a security guard who's been interviewed in a couple places said he stepped up and asked these guys what they were buying the stuff for.
Well, that's good, because there was like a ski mask and rope, and there was, you know, and I'm like, wait a second.
Hey, fellas, are you hobbyists? What's happening here?
I would have said Halloween costume. That's
yeah,
what I would
which
said.
Is an interesting thing to do in February.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
seems like a sequel to The Big Lebowski. Like, it seems like, you know, there was all that mystery and fake hoax crimes in that film, and it seems like this is the same concept.
In a completely unparalleled crime and a much more scary situation, a Coast Guard lieutenant has been arrested on a terrorism charge that is really off the charts. And the arresting paperwork's first line was he had planned to kill people at an unprecedented level and should not be granted bail. This story will roll out later today. But on the hit list were politicians, media figures, you name it. And this is someone who wanted to kill everyone because if Trump were impeached, he was going to go on a murder rampage. There's crazies on both sides, kids. That shouldn't be news to anybody. Next, new Attorney General Bill Barr says the Mueller report is coming soon, maybe as early as next week. Pat Brady will talk about this coming up here in a little bit. Look, if this doesn't come out, which seems to be the panic of everybody, and I think it will, but if this doesn't come out, it seems to indicate that someone has something to hide. Because if this says...
Is it made public? Anyway?
If this says you're innocent, why wouldn't right. you make this front page news
well, that's
everywhere?
Well, that's the fear. The fear right now, and it's not really being talked about, is that the Attorney General has the ability to keep it sealed, to say, I looked at it, it's done, thank you very much, and let's move on.
Oh, you're going to hear about this all day. Yeah. All day long. Next, J.B. Pritzker, betting on gambling. And maybe legalizing pot. Neither enough to plug the $3.2 billion hole. The pot part of this will take a little longer, as you said yesterday, Justin. The sports gambling part, bring your money.
The problem is, and I applaud, I guess, if you're going to go in that direction to find revenue, but you're not even close. I mean, $3.2 billion.
That's why I was shocked. I didn't
know. Only $300 million yeah. that they could muster in 2019. So I guess it's a step in the right direction, but
we'll
talk with Pat about it more. But there's a lot that still needs to happen to be able to plug a really substantial deficit.
Two words, taxes. Taxes. That's where exactly. this money's exactly. coming from. Next, the young man named Zion Williamson, and let's go live to Duke where Cameron Indoor, Mark Carman standing by.
I'm with the shoes, Steve.
Duke phenom Zion Williamson. This kid is probably the best player in college basketball, right?
This kid is the best
maybe
player.
Maybe in history.
Yeah, and this guy is, people are saying the next LeBron James, but we're not kidding this time. That's how good this kid
LeBron
is.
LeBron didn't even go to college.
Right, this guy's bigger than LeBron. This guy jumps higher than LeBron.
He's fast.
This guy's preposterous.
Can shoot from anywhere on the court. His shoe exploded last night. That's not a joke. His shoe exploded last night in the first 3 minutes of the game. It caused him to twist a knee at least. They'll have information on the injury later today. The video's bizarre.
Yeah. He's coming out of his shoe. He's got a mild knee sprain, Steve, so he's going to be okay. You know, it was interesting. A couple weeks ago, former Bull Scottie Pippen talked about this, saying, hey, this kid is going to be the number one pick in the draft. He shouldn't play another game in college, and people were riding Pippen about that. And then something like this happens. He's going to be fine, but millions of dollars sitting out there. These guys are not getting paid.
But regardless, I've never seen a shoe explode in a basketball game. Have you ever seen that, Carm? You cover sports. You cover the basketball.
Not like this, no. I mean,
to say explode, the side of his foot slid out of the side of the shoe.
Yeah,
the thing fell apart. Like it fell apart like it was a toy put together by Steve.
Not a good with my own glue shoe kit.
Not a good look for Nike.
No,
that's a problem.
And Steve Grzanich said that the stock is down today.
It's down 1.5%.
I love the billions of shoes that Nike makes. Hey, did you see that one go?
Hey,
I'm selling my stock today.
They endorse the biggest athletes in the world, and they endorse this one, and woof.
I actually saw a shoe come apart at a comedy club. A very large man who owned the club, and I mean like large, like building large, tore a shoe from toe to heel. Walking just from the pressure. That's the only other time I've seen a shoe come apart. And by the way, that guy was not playing basketball. Yeah.
Is there a possibility that these are like his lucky shoes and they were old? Or because it seems like these guys...
No, the thing is to wear new shoes.
Yeah,
is
right.
That the thing?
Right.
Like...
But do you do that in college, even at Duke?
I think Duke is a big contract with Nike, so I'm assuming they
but
do. Did
they get new shoes for every game?
I don't think they wear new shoes every single game. No, but I don't think these were lucky, you know, shoes from seventh grade either.
They looked pretty clean in the video I was watching.
Yeah.
They looked pretty clean.
Amazing.
Is it possible that these were North Carolina plant shoes and this shoe was supposed to go?
Well, anything's possible. I mean, if you consider the top
shoe
story
gate
with Jussie Smollett and everything else, we'll throw it all in there. Why not?
Next, Blackhawks in. Let's go back to Mark Harmon now at the United Center. Mark, boy, you travel fast for one thing.
Yeah.
And the Hawks are in the playoffs by a point after last night's overtime win.
They're tied with Colorado.
Oh, yes. I didn't know Colorado won.
Yeah, so we're at 61 points apiece. And, so I guess they're right there, Steve. Sitting there tied for the last spot. They're a couple points back.
And once again, with stress and an attempt to kill me, which I believe this was all about, they were up 4-1. And then they end up getting
every
tied
every 5 minutes, they score a goal, and the third, you know, the Red Wings score.
Ridiculous.
I think they're number one in goals given up, right?
Well, 38th goal for Kane. And
you're being positive over there.
Yes, and his 19th straight on the point streak.
Drink it.
9 of 11, they've won. Everybody
the
else,
Cat scored again.
The Cat scored again. Beautiful feed. He was and the Cat took his time. A little, what do they call it, the old upper corner there, Steve? Top shelf?
Yeah, top shelf. That was the goalie's right shoulder?
That goalie's left shoulder.
The left shoulder, okay.
Yeah. Okay. I stopped watching it 4-1. I was doing Northwestern basketball last night, and then all of a sudden they're in overtime. And but, hey, no problem.
Northwestern final?
63-49 Ohio State.
Yeah. Rough year for our boys.
To say the least.
But they'll be fine.
Sure.
They need to grow into it and get healthier.
They're tanking, like the Bulls.
They're going to get the number one.
You think Northwestern's going for a rebuild? You're not helping. That's your top six.
That's it!
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
He is Nick at night. Julio, he knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking. I need to know.
It's our pal Nick DiGiulio. Hi, Nick.
Thinking. Hey, buddy.
How you been?
All right. How are you?
Hawks are in the playoffs.
I mean, man. First of all, did you watch the game Monday night?
Actually I did. Yeah.
The most insane game I've ever seen.
Yeah.
9 goals after the first period.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was nuts. But yeah, I'm excited. It's you know how that long stretch early in the season, how it was really painful to watch them? That's over.
Yeah. You know, it's all over now. It's straight to the cup. No, it's straight to the cup.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all we have to worry about. I want to ask you about Dan Chigrou and why you're so hard to work for, but before we get to that, let me get your Oscar predictions, your annual Oscar predictions. I'll shout it out. You tell me who's going to win. Best director.
Alfonso Cuarón. Now, let me just say this really quickly. Who I want to win, who I think is going to win, is different because I think Roma should win every single category that it's nominated for. Let me just get that out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, that should be like in the Kindle Oscars. I can't read a movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just won't do it.
Gotcha.
I just can't do it.
I gotcha.
I understand it's great art and it's a great film. It's just not for me, Nick.
I gotcha. I understand.
All right. So Alfonso Cuarón for what movie?
Roma.
Oh, is that the one
you can't
like?
Read? The one you can't read. Yeah.
Best supporting actor.
It's going to be Mahershala Ali for
Green Book.
Green Book.
Love Green Book.
I did, too. I thought it was great, and I think he deserves it. Although, Adam Driver, fantastic in Black Klansman.
And Black Klansman's a great movie, too. Best Supporting Actress.
Best Supporting Actress is going to be Regina King, without question. Like, she's the actual lock of the night. There's no question about it. She was fantastic in that movie.
Has she won before?
I'm sorry?
No. Has she been nominated before?
She has.
Yes, she has.
And she also was the daughter in 227. So I just want to
say, is that true?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Best actor.
Best actor is going to go to Rami Malek for being a rich little in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, he's great. No question about it. How about actress?
Best Actress is going to go to Glenn Close. And people are like, oh, well, yeah, she's never won an Academy Award. She's Glenn Close, and she's finally going to win an Academy Award. But everybody's all like, oh, it's a big snub to Lady Gaga. No, it's not. Lady Gaga was really good in Star is Born, but Glenn Close is Glenn Close, and she deserves the award.
What was the name of that movie? The Wife?
The Wife, yeah, it's great. She's amazing in it, yeah.
My favorite scene, I don't know if you like this, but was at the end when she sits up in the bathtub, and that's the is that the same movie?
Yeah, it's the same movie, and then she gets shot in the chest by Ann Archer, yeah.
Those are your five main awards. What other thing about the Oscars is interesting you?
Well, you know, the Oscars this year are going to be interesting. Are going to be interesting because they keep making idiotic decisions, and I think the show is going to be a mess. First of all, no host, first time ever, no host. Secondly, a couple of weeks ago, they decided that they were going to not broadcast four of the awards and give them out during commercials, which included Best Cinematography and Best Editing.
Yeah, those are big awards.
Yes, they are. And then finally, because of the outrage, they went, oh, okay, we'll do them during the show. And now they've decided that they've only have four of the best song performances happening. And one of them, they took Emily Blunt out for the Mary Poppins song, and they put Bette Midler in.
Yeah, it's idiotic.
Yeah. It's totally idiotic. So, I mean, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting thing. I think the show's going to be a mess. But, of course, I'm going to watch it, and I'll be mad about it for 4 months.
Dan Sugar was your producer for how long?
Well, 5 years, on the full-time overnight. But, you know, he had been at the station for almost 16 years. So when he took over for overnights and when I would fill in all the time for Steve and Johnny and Bill Leff, I worked with. I can't tell you the number of times I worked with Dan.
And he had a couple of babies, and he was trying to balance being a dad and a husband and your work wife. All of that added up to what?
To him needing to take a break, man. He was burning the candle at both ends. He was having some difficulty with managing his time. He is such a precise producer and cares so much about what he does that it started to take a toll on his personal life and on his health and his mental health. He was starting to feel really kind of shaky about everything. And that's the way he prioritizes. He's so good at his job that he would put kind of his personal life on the back burner to make sure that every show that he and I did together was great and flawless, and that he booked great guests, and that his content was amazing.
Couldn't do it anymore. It's understandable.
It's totally understandable. And he's the best producer that I've ever worked with, ever. And I miss him already. It's only been like a week and a half.
He starts here next Monday.
Oh, is that right? Wow. Okay. He said, you know, I mean, look, outside of just him being my producer, he's my friend.
Right.
And I want him to take care of himself. I want him to do what he needs to do to make his life, his personal life, his personal health better. And if that means leaving my show, that means leaving my show, and good for him.
Yeah. Well, good for you. And I know going through what you've gone through in the past few years where you saved your own life. And he was witness to that and part of that.
Not just witness to it. He drove me to the hospital the night that it all came to a head.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know.
That is a friend.
The connection that I have with Dan is never going to end, but, you know, and I respect what he, you know, the decision that he made, and I really hope that everything goes better for him. And I'm working with Ben Anderson right now. He's a terrific producer and a good guy, and we're going to continue to do quality, fun shows in the overnight. And I'm going to miss Dan, and everybody who listens to my show is going to miss Dan. But he needs to do what he needs to do, and I only wish him the best.
This had nothing to do with the fact that he didn't like Roma.
He hated Roma. Oh, are you kidding? He had to read it.
Thank you, buddy. That's the great Nick DiGilio. We're back with the headlines next on 720 WGN.
Welcome to Sunday.
Wait a second.
What day is it? The date's
wrong. May. Thursday.
What year?
Wait, what?
Hello, you there, boy.
Me, sir?
Yes, you, my good fella. What day is today?
Today?
From NBC News in Washington, the longest running show in television history. This is Meet the Press with Chuck Todd.
And I bring you the hardest working man in the news business, my friend Chuck Todd. Weren't you in Los Angeles about 10 minutes ago?
I was. Thanks for noticing. And I guess thanks to Red Eyes, I'm back on the East Coast talking to you.
Oof. Yeah, I'm impressed. Yeah. You're Iron Man without the suit. Am I wrong not to be worried about the release of this Mueller thing next week? Because if it's not released, then everybody can go, wow, he's clearly guilty, and then impeachment proceedings start.
Wow, that's the bar you want to set.
Well, I'm just thinking, what are the triggers?
I have to say, you know, it's very interesting, and I say this, My team has some reports. Look, the Justice Department, here are the facts. The Justice Department is preparing to handle the release of the report. But no one has any more information than that. If Mueller really is close to wrapping up, there is a lot of unfinished business that's left out there. So is he going to have some grand finale where there's an indictment of Donald Trump Jr.? There's an indictment or something else on Kushner. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot, a handful of unresolved things, the biggest being Donald Trump Jr. He never once even attempted a subpoena of the president to talk to him about 2016. Now, I understand not wanting to talk, feeling as if the courts would say no to an interview with a sitting president on actions he took while in office. But I always have thought that Mueller was going to be very careful with a subpoena, that if you did it, you do it for his actions in 2016 for the candidate. And then I think you avoid the issue of whether a sitting president's actions can be investigated in real time. So, look, I guess I'm skeptical that it comes next week.
The report itself.
We'll see. I mean, it feels like he has too much unfinished business unless he is planning this giant grand finale. It certainly makes me a little more leery about tomorrow and Monday. Fridays and Mondays have been days he does a lot
of
filing.
Right, so Friday's indictment day.
Fridays and Mondays, right. So one would assume there's one more indictment minimum up his sleeve and one more action. And there, you know, I had a lawyer on yesterday who said, you know, if he was going to subpoena the president, you would do that at the very, very end.
Pat, Brady, and Justin are here. Let's get you both in here. Pat?
Hey, Chuck, you know, when you do that indictment, you got to reserve the grand jury time over there. Is anybody going to done any investigation to see if he's going to the grand jury tomorrow? Because that's where you get the true bill.
Yeah, right? Does he have a tea time?
Yeah.
True. Well, he does have, they have a regular schedule, right? And our folks have been pretty good about tracking it. And if you recall, he extended the grand jury's been extended, I believe, at least through May.
Right.
It was 6 months when he did the extension, and I think that was sometime in December. So, and apology for not having that top of mind, but I'm pretty sure, I know it was extended 6 months, so it's either May or June. So he has certainly impaneled, the grand jury is still impaneled. But that's, you know, that we do have people literally watching the grand jury schedule. Yeah. That's for sure.
Chuck, the New York Times put out a piece that really was amazing, a data piece that tracked how many times the president has referenced or intimidated or bullied or whatever you want to call talked about the investigation. It is mind-boggling how many times he has done this over the course of his tenure in the White House and even before that. Does that resonate at all? Do people look at that, or at this point is it just white noise?
Well, I think it's white noise unless there's new information. I've always believed that it's white noise until new information. People do change their minds when new information is introduced. You know, I have to say, when you look at the totality of how often he denies and how much he tries to make this Mueller probe seem to be a hoax and all this, you got to ask yourself, the whole point of the Mueller probe was to try to investigate Russian interference in the American election system.
Right.
He's never once talked about his concern about getting to the bottom of Russian interference
1,000%
into the system. It's among, you know, there's a lot of damning non-reactions he's had. That's pretty high on the list of non-reactions he's had during this entire process.
Yeah, because again, if you're innocent
and concerned about what the Russians did.
If you're innocent, he could have been working with him from the beginning. If you're innocent, you could have helped make this report come out months and months and months ago. But as a president of the United States,
you want to work harder to make it look like you're cooperating. He's always gone out of his way not to cooperate. Now, I know that, and I've always been hesitant to say that that's an aha guilty moment, because look, I'm now just covered the guy. I'm spending a lot of time researching him for another project. He's consistent. whether he, you know, he fights everything. That is a lesson he took from Roy Cohn. Never let a charge go unanswered, whether you have the truth on your side or not. So there is, that's why I've always been, well, I mean, the guy is irresponsible enough to fight everything, even if it does make him look guilty. Like, he believes in defending himself so much, he'd do that. But I have to tell you, when you look at the totality of it, where's his curiosity and concern about Russian interference? So,
it's eye-opening.
That's the bottom line question. Yeah.
So here's the conspiracy theory of the day at 6:45 in Chicago. Barr gets confirmed to set up the release next week while Trump is in Vietnam talking about North Korea. What's your response to that conspiracy?
I actually don't think Barr would do that. I actually think Barr is going to be very mindful of all the optics and all of those things. Look, I'm not going to prejudge Barr here. I think Barr has a reputation. I think Barr has a reputation he cares about. Yeah. And I think Barr is also savvy enough to know he's the most unfireable person in Trump's orbit right now. That's not to say he couldn't be fired, but you know what I mean? Right now he actually is. He couldn't dump on his new AG this quick. So the question is whether Barr's going to use some of that political capital. Others, Mike Pompeo had similar capital and he never uses it, right? Does Barr use it? I actually think the more interesting timing is the Cohen testimony decision. I don't think it was an accident that Cohen agreed to testify while Trump was out of the country. Because you know what that means? Trump won't watch it.
Right.
I mean, he'll watch what he can, but he won't be able to watch much of it. First of all, he'll be testifying in the middle of the Asian night.
That's a great point. I hadn't thought about that. That's a great point.
That, and I actually think if you're Michael Cohen and you really were concerned about your family, well, knowing that the president was going to watch less in real time, less opportunity, you know, it does at least mitigate the amount of time the president's watching your testimony, because that's when he goes on these rage tweets. And, you know, by the way, you haven't brought it up. I'm going to bring it up because it kills me that we're sort of used to this by now. But the white nationalists in the Coast Guard.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier. Yeah.
Talked about top of the show.
Again, the president's not responsible, but the president needs to take some responsibility.
Address it immediately.
Yes, he needs to take some responsibility. I'm not saying he's responsible, but this is now. And by the way, we now have a pattern. The Pittsburgh guy was in his late 40s, white man, you know, was right. Looking for pure, you know. The pipe bomber was a guy in his late 40s, same thing. He was trying to pretend he was something else. Turned out he was just angry white guy. Now this, you know, all fueled in some way by Trump. By the way, steroids were involved in two of them now. There's a weird subculture of these dangerous folks that we're not addressing yet because the president won't take responsibility.
Well, we had news come out yesterday talking about
responsible, but you got to take responsibility.
Right, news came out yesterday about more hate groups in this country than in any time in modern history, and it's all tied back to this. And as the president of the United States, you stand up and you say, "I don't associate with any of you. I don't endorse any of you, and it will stop. And the best people in law enforcement will find you as this continues by any of you." I mean,
put it this way. I know he's chomping at the bit to get into the Jesse Smollett story.
Yeah.
But if he gets into that, you better take some responsibility on the Coast Guard white nationalists.
Last word, Justin.
Andrew McCabe's on the book tour, the former acting FBI director. A lot of, including Trump and right-wing media, is talking about a coup, talking about Rod Rosenstein and wearing a wire. Is there any... obviously, these are words that are thrown around, and it's obviously to divide us, but is there any thought about, you know, if that is true, that this could be a coup that is coming in from the intelligence community?
I would look at it this way. Is it a coup, or was there even greater concern? The point is, I actually think this is why we have Congress. There needs to be some hearings. I want to see both of those guys, under oath, asked about this incident. We got to know, because... There are, whether the fact is 30 to 40% of the country is going to think that was a coup. So explain what the hell you were talking about. Explain what happened. Why were you talking this way? I look, this goes to how I feel about the Mueller report, too. Anything we keep under wraps, anything that stays ambiguous, that is fact, that everybody agrees happened, but it's ambiguous as to the explanation for it, is only going to exploit our divisions worse, is only going to make this worse. I mean, all everybody has to step up and be more transparent and say, we've got to get to the bottom of these lingering allegations, because the exploitation of them in order to create, frankly, more divides and perhaps help people get away with crimes is just wrong. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, Lindsey Graham, I hope, follows his word and says he wants to bring him before Capitol Hill. I happen to think it's not going to be a great hearing for President Trump if that happens. But I think we all need to rip this Band-Aid off, because I think it's too dangerous of an allegation to just sort of linger out there.
Chuck Todd, Meet the Press, MTP Daily, flying all over the country, finding stuff to talk about because you need to hear what's happening in the world. And by the way, Chuck, you're a sports guy. If you're wearing Nikes this morning, check to see if they're the exploding Nikes. They seem to be very hot with the college kids.
I will tell you this. I got my Adidas University of Miami special apparel. Since Nike decided to drop Miami, I'm an Adidas household now, brother. I got my green and orange. I actually got my green and orange running shoes on right now. So
way to draw the line. Way to draw the line.
Yeah, I don't need no thinking Nikes. That's the way I can be bought.
Checked out. Meet the Press Sunday. Thank you.
All right, guys.
There you go.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
In a continuing saga, producer Pete Zimmerman, you know, this is not to have anything to do with the produce in front of his house or cameras attached to his house to catch the produce bill, criminals. Apparently, we have a dishwasher incident. What happened?
We have a broken dishwasher because...
So he told me this morning his dishwasher is broken, and then I asked, well, how did it break?
I'm the dishwasher in the house. You know, I do the dishes. So we have...
Well, actually, your dishwasher was the dishwasher.
Yeah,
the
that's true. I load the dishwasher.
Right. Yeah.
We have a kind of a small kitchen, and I'm always in there kind of bothering my wife while she's cooking dinner.
And what are you doing now?
She's just, yeah, I'm a hoverer. I like to see what's happening, and she's always saying, can you move? So I was loading the dishwasher, so the dishwasher is down, you know, the door, the dishwasher is down, and then I just leave it down, and I kind of go over into my wife's way to see what she's making for dinner, and she's like, what are you doing? And she's kind of backing up, boom, falls over the door that I had left down.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh. Is she okay?
She's fine. She's
while
fine.
Holding a knife.
On the ground.
Yeah, she was like holding a huge carving knife.
She's in the middle of training for a marathon right now.
This is why we can't allow you in the kitchen.
Was she writhing on the floor? Was it a lot of drama?
It was a lot of drama, a lot of onions everywhere.
How much cursing? It had to be some cursing going on.
On my part, yes.
Uh-huh. Like, you almost broke the dishwasher.
Those onions.
He goes straight victim.
That was an organic onion.
Oh, S, are you okay? One of those moments?
Yeah. So then I was like, oh, she came to and she had to realize
smelling salts.
I realized she
regained consciousness and suddenly she loved me again.
I realized she was okay. The onions were all picked up. But then I tried to load the dishwasher and like the door was, I couldn't fix the door.
So who broke the dishwasher?
Molly broke the dishwasher.
Exactly.
Bingo.
Exactly. The Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. That's where Steve is next.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
All right, back now. Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart's the sheriff from Blazing Saddles. Tom Dart scheduled to join us in just a second.
You should interview him as the sheriff from Blazing Saddles.
Right?
Ask him a couple questions.
You know, since you're talking Blazing Saddles, can I give away a pair of tickets to the Mel Brooks comedy, The Producers?
Oh, whoa, look at you.
Now playing at the Paramount Theater in Aurora through March 17th. Get tickets at ParamountAurora.com. Seventh caller.
All right, there you go.
312-981-7200 is the number. 710, it was a week ago that a thug with a gun killed five people in Aurora. He never should have had the gun. And what's the loophole that he was able to fall through to make this happen? Sheriff Tom Dart joins us. Look, I salute you for trying to get guys with guns away from their guns and keep guns away from people that shouldn't have them. And that's work that continues every day. But do you have any sense, Tom Dart, on how this happened?
You know, Steve, it's one thing to say that there's a broken system. There's another thing to say there's no system at all. And I mean, let me explain to you the insanity of this system here, Steve. So to have a firearm, you need a FOID card. Yep. You apply to the state police to get your FOID card. There's things that you can do that get that revoked. Commit a crime, have a mental illness, things along those lines. Then it's revoked. The system that's in existence only speaks to the card. So you think about this, Steve. It's as if we collectively as a society said, that individual cannot be around cards. Get the FOID card, get his credit card, get his library card, get all his cards. The system literally only goes after the card. It doesn't speak to the guns.
Wait, is that stupid law, or is that lobbying by gun makers?
Lobbying. Trust me, 4 or 5 years ago, I was down in Springfield on this very issue saying, listen, this is absurd, guys. That what we're trying to get at is get the guns away from people. We could care less about a physical card.
Right.
We need the guns. And when I tried to put some teeth in the law, they wanted nothing to do with it, absolutely nothing. And so it's one of those scenarios where on my own, 5 years ago, I put my own gun unit together that goes to people's houses. So I get the list of who's revoked. All I'm supposed to do is get cards. I go to the house cards, but I'm also getting guns as well. I can't kick in the door or anything like that, but when I go and talk to people and explain to them, you no longer can have guns. I've gotten about 1,000 guns turned over to me as a result of that. I attempted to get the law changed so that I can get into the house to get the guns, and the best I was able to do was get the authorization to get a search warrant. But think about this, you know, Pat, get this one quickly. You need probable cause for a search warrant. And the only evidence I have is he has a revoked card. I don't know if he bought any guns or anything. And so the law had no teeth. And it just goes at Steve, this was not by accident. This isn't something where people said, oh, my God, that is an absurd system, Tom. That was by design.
And Pat Brady, this is where Democrats can't sit back and take the high road here because Democrats control the politics of the state. Why is that even remotely a deal in the state? The
gun lobby very strong in Springfield, as Tom just mentioned. But you have some new law proposed, right?
I have, Pat, but as you know, Steve was saying, you know, this has been a bipartisan disaster. So, you know, it has a lot to do with, you know, the NRA and rural versus urban. And so we have law that's going to, the goal here's the other thing. So when you go to a gun shop to buy a gun or from some other gun transactions, not all of them though, but you have to go into the system that the gun dealer calls the state police and runs my name to make sure I'm okay to have a gun. So the system, the state, has a list of all the inquiries for me trying to get a gun. The bill that I have that we're putting down in Springfield is to let, when someone's revoked, to let us get access to the information about how many times has he inquired about buying a gun, so that when one of my folks go to the door, they know whether or not this guy has tried to buy one gun or he's tried to buy 1,000 guns.
Right.
And so it's going to give people a greater sense of safety, because when you're going to the door, Steve, we've been doing this, as I said, for about 5 or 6 years. The stories I could tell you would make your head spin.
Sure.
I've had parents come to us and say, thank God you showed up here. We love our daughter to death, but she has an illness, and they revoked her card, but she still had all the guns. And they're literally, here, take the guns. Get them out of this house. Please help us. And so we would like to have information when we go to the door that, you know what, this guy's inquired 100 times for guns. We better be a little bit more on our toes about this one.
But it's got to be an impossible position for you if the system is dependent upon honesty of the people with guns or even yeah. with families of people with guns.
Exactly. This is like, can you imagine this? This is the honor system when it comes to getting guns away from somebody who has maybe an illness or criminal conviction. What do you think their mindset is?
Right.
Yeah, you know what? I'll help these guys. Oh, why not? Let's be straightforward. Of course people are going to say, oh, no. I gave my guns to my uncle. He's holding all of my guns. I mean, this is truly, by design, an insanely inept system. And now everyone's running around with their usual thoughts and prayers stuff instead of sitting there saying, okay, this could have and should have been stopped, and let's do it. And if that means we're going to have to give a little bit more information to law enforcement, we're going to do it.
Sheriff Dart, there seems to be a divide when it comes to law enforcement and the gun lobby, and you would think that wouldn't be the case, that those two entities would be on the same page and they would be the ones that are advocating for the right kind of legislation. Why is there a divide between those?
You know what? Honest to God, that's a great question, because the reality of it is, and I've seen it played out numerous times, it's a regional divide. There's a whole different mindset up north than there is down south, just within my own Sheriff Association. Great people, but we disagree on gun-related policy almost all the time. I mean, literally, it's me, and then there's, you know, 90-some other sheriffs that are opposed to what I'm up to. So it's almost always regional.
Sheriff, just to wrap my head around how many things we're talking about when you guys go to this house, of all the people that have FOID cards, you know, here, how many get revoked, and do you have to go get them from them?
Is there a percentage?
Well, we as I say, you know, Steve, we set this unit up on our own 5 years ago, and I'm not whining. You know, we make things work, you know, but did we get any revenue or resources to do it? No, we just knew this is a priority, so we made it work. My only point was I didn't have people sitting around with nothing to do, so it's a large list of revocations, and so we go and get as many as we can, and like in 2013, we got just about 300, and 20, you know, basically we're averaging about 300 a year.
That's like one a day.
Yeah, and last year we had just under 500 that we went to. But are there many more out there? Yeah, there's hundreds more. And in my strongest understanding, just so we're clear, my strongest understanding is we're the only county, or there might be one or two others, but we're the only ones that are doing this. So all around the state, as you've seen, you know, these poor folks in Aurora and the law enforcement agency there, you know, this was never a system that was systematically set up to work well. So, you know, people don't even know, did they even get notice that this guy was revoked?
Right, and they're still trying to figure out that end of it as well. I thought the police department would stand up about the whole thing, along with risking their own lives to shut that guy down. I want to ask you and Pat a question before we run out of time here. Pat, you know the politics of Springfield inside out in D.C. as well, and Tom Dart, you served in the legislature. I personally don't discount somebody for taking money to run for office from a legitimate organization. Where I draw the line is when you know that legitimate organization is wrong and you hide because you want more money from them. I think the public generally doesn't understand this piece, and why would they? Politicians don't sign contracts with the NRA. These are verbal agreements. And handshakes and just winks and nods of understanding that the NRA sends me money, and therefore I'm never going to say anything bad about the NRA. Is that an overstatement, or is that true?
No, I mean, Steve, at the heart of it, there are definitely sincere people who truly believe, with or without the NRA, that guns are an inherently good thing that we should have. It's embedded in our Constitution, apparently, somewhere, and they feel that way. Then are there others that, you know, they're either terrified of the NRA because they're in a district where they have influence, or there's some that are terrified of the money that could come in as a result of it? Oh, God, yes. And that comes down to just the simplest thing. People down there and in other legislative bodies just have to be really, really okay with losing an election. That, you know what? I stood up for something, and you know what? I'm not there anymore. You know, just like when, you know, Pat stood up in his own party, and you know, he's not the chairman of it anymore. But you know what? Your head is up higher, and you feel really good about yourself. But that's not the norm, unfortunately.
Well, and that's what character's all about. And Pat Brady, I think when you were on the air with me, after as head of the Republican Party in Illinois, saying we are behind the eight ball here, we're not going to stand up and say two people that love each other can't get married because they're gay. It's ridiculous. The phone call started to drub you out of the leadership position. Why don't we have, because it's character, why don't we have more politicians who are willing to say, if I lose the election, I lose the election?
You know, I think we do, and I think Tom's a great example of it on a lot of positions he's taken. But the reality is, you get to these positions, you like being there, and you want to win the election. There's pressure from the party. There's pressure from others.
I just don't understand. Look, it's not an idealistic viewpoint. I don't know how I'd get up the next day and look in the mirror. I don't.
I've never understood that, Steve, to be quite frank with you. I've never understood that. I would so much rather lose an election on many, many levels, and I just don't get it. That's not even being noble. That's just like, okay, well, you know, you win some, you lose some, but you stand for something.
Right.
Hey,
right.
Tom, as former Republican Party chairman, I can teach you how to lose elections if you need to.
Hey, I lost it too, but.
Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart, I appreciate the time.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks, Tom.
I am Hans.
And I am Franz, and we just want to pop your lawn.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
That's a good story. Well, I mean, again, pretty much every day on the most valuable person on the planet, we have a good story. There's a guy named Ryan Belcher from Ypsilanti, Michigan. And he came upon a driver pinned in a rollover crash. Oh, did I mention he's a weightlifter? He picked the SUV up and moved it. Yeah.
No biggie.
The story is Ypsilanti. He's from Belleville, just minor detail.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah, because here's the thing. For everybody that goes like I did last night, went, I'm tired. I'm not going to the gym. Ryan didn't take a night off. And in this case, it led to helping him save a life. Ryan.
Hey, good morning.
We'd like 303 East Wacker moved 4 feet to the right. Can you come down here?
We gotta call my coach first and see if he approves or not.
A crumpled black Jeep Cherokee laying on its roof in melting snow near a 50-mile-an-hour speed limit sign. A sedan with front end damage, cockeyed in the road about 15 yards away. You're 29 years old. You come up on this. You could have driven by. What'd you find when you got out of the car?
Actually, I was at work. I came out of my office building. It was directly across the street. It was directly across the street from our office building here.
All right, so what'd you do?
So, as me and one of my coworkers, we approached the accident. I see the lady obviously in the middle of the road in her car. As I approached her, she was pretty bloody. Her face was pretty messed up. But I started talking to her, and she was very coherent. Was moving her hands and moving her head, so it was great. I seen there was already like four gentlemen on the scene over here at the Jeep. And they were trying to actually bend that speed limit pole backwards to try to release him, his body that was smashed up against it.
Wow.
So as I approached, my first instinct, I looked at the vehicle and said, if I can in any kind of way just either push this Jeep, the rear end, you know, slightly slide it or anything like that, I know I'll be able to free him. And there was actually the back there where she hit him at, the window was broken out. So I was able to kind of like, I don't know, in a way, hook my arms into that broken window area. So like I was grabbing it with my forearms in a way. I was bent down and I just kind of stood up and started walking.
You just picked it up and took it for a walk. Now,
I took it for about a 3-foot walk.
Now Ryan's a big guy. 350 pounds is the scales you're tipping?
Yeah, well, last night before I went to bed, I was 348 pounds.
Well, you obviously missed dinner. But here's the thing. What you're describing, aside from responding to an emergency, that's not normally a position where you have leverage in strength. Like, the normal person doesn't hook a truck and then go take it for a walk. You got to have legs that are unbelievably strong as well. So you work out head to toe, I assume?
Yeah, every 5 days a week. I'm a professional power lifter.
Me too.
I lift heavy all the time. I put a lot of heavy weight on my back. My legs are my strongest aspect of my body.
Thank God.
It would be, you know, you only walk on them.
Well, Ryan, I would just say give us a quick tutorial on lifting a Jeep Cherokee. Do you lift with your legs?
Yeah, everything. Really, I felt it everywhere after. At first, when I first lifted out, what's crazy is the guy that was actually standing next to me, as I lifted this vehicle, he let go and says, "Oh, you got this," and then walked away. Like, what?
No, I don't.
Excuse me. I'll appreciate some more help, but whatever, you know. I just started moving. It was all so fast. It was unbelievable how fast it happened. It was so quick.
Now, how much of it was adrenaline versus you working hard and being in great shape? I know it's a combination platter here, but you must have had the adrenaline pumping pretty hard.
Yeah, the adrenaline was going. Not only just off of that, but from the beginning of the scene, you know, from seeing the lady in the middle of the road. And what really got my adrenaline going is as I'm on my way walking to the accident, I hear somebody yelling, "Get them kids away from that vehicle." So I start running immediately as I hear that, because obviously if there's children in this vehicle,
sure,
that's got to be first and foremost that we have to get out of there. But luckily there was nobody there. There was just people who were stopping and their kids were getting out of the vehicle to see the accident. So that was number one. That got me going immediately. I 350 pounds was running full speed across the street. So
the guy that you saved, the nurses and doctors said, "Look, he wouldn't be here without you." So you literally saved a life.
Now, and you had
I know he's got injuries from the waist down that still need a lot of recovery time, but you should feel very good about that.
And he actually got to meet him.
Yeah, you met him face to face, right?
Yeah, I did. Actually, we talk on the phone almost every single day. Since Saturday. He called me the other night at like 10:30 at night, and I was sitting there watching TV. He says, "You know who this is, right?" And I said, "Yeah, I know who this is. Well, who is it then?" He's a good guy. He's hilarious.
That's good news. Yeah,
we brought our kids together. We had both our kids together at the hospital room the other day. They got to eat pizza together, and everybody was hugging, and it was emotional.
Sure. Can't imagine. A couple of personal weightlifting notes from you. I know you're a professional weightlifter. You bench pressed how much in competition? What's your high?
In competition, my best bench press has been 530 pounds.
You know what they call that in my case? Three reps. On a good day, three reps. And not 530. That's cumulative. What about deadlifting?
Deadlift is 805 pounds.
Of course it is. Good God. How much have you squatted?
905 pounds in competition.
Good Lord, man. You are a human mountain. God put you in places you're supposed to be at the time you're there. And, your spirituality may not agree with mine, but I think there's a reason you were there, and thank God you were.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Bye, man. Hold on.
I believe so, too.
Hold on. Most valuable person on the planet right there.
Wow.
I'm paying him to follow me around. If I ever get in trouble, I just want him to lift me out of it. Good Lord. Imagine that.
If you take...
And I love the guy that went, "Hey, you got this." If you take what?
I just, if you take 530 pounds or whatever, it's 503, just take off the zeros. I could bench 53. I could squat 90. Yeah. Then we're there.
Hey, you got to start somewhere.
Right.
Back with the headlines next, 720 WGN.
Now, he used to be the acting chairman of the GOP Party. GOP Party. A federal prosecutor that we need to give our utmost respect.
Respect the man. Respect the man.
I just tune right in.
Yeah.
On the Cochran Show today.
Come on.
To hear what he is saying.
What is he saying?
John DeCosta.
You never know about something that he said. We'll keep your
He's out back from doing stand-up in Omaha. He'll be on the show tomorrow. Swaying,
baby. The analyst with info that you need to know.
I play the long version of this because it makes Pat really uncomfortable.
That's so good. It's the best one he's done.
Oh, yeah.
Here it comes.
Now he's never gonna look at politics as simply black and white. Yeah, listen to Pat Brady. Listen to Pat Brady. A Republican rarity.
Pat Brady's here, in case you didn't know.
Wait, we gotta do a segment?
Did you play this for your kids?
Oh, yeah.
And which of your kids gave you the most grief about it?
All of them. Every morning I get up at 4, whenever to get down here, and I go wake my youngest up, the last one home, say, "Today's Cochran Day," and I scream at her and wake her up, and then she goes back to sleep.
And Eric Adelson is traveling today, but rumor has it there might actually be a song.
For Eric Adelson?
Yeah.
Oh, well. I'm going to have to veto that.
It better be as funky.
His mom,
Pat Brady.
His mom will be happy.
Yeah, the 80s were a big decade for you, and that's got an 80s vibe to it, sort of a Beverly Hills Cop, Axl Rose kind of vibe.
If people go to the WGN Radio Instagram, they'll be able to see Justin air guitaring to that.
Air bassing. I want to make that clear.
Oh, air bassing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm doing it. That's up here. Guitar's down here, and this is up here.
We're just talking about the mayor's race off the air, Pat Brady. Who are you handicapping here?
Man, it's wide open. Conventional wisdom as we speak today, maybe Daily Lori Lightfoot?
Daily Lori Lightfoot. I don't know that I've heard Daily
Lori
Lightfoot.
Then again, my tombstone will say Donald Trump will never be president. So I wouldn't put a lot of stock. I don't think anybody knows. Anybody really says they know. I'm not sure.
No, I don't think they do either.
What moves the needle in the last 5 days? Probably the ability to get the vote out, like any race. And whoever's got money typically can get the vote out because the old machine politics just isn't there anymore. So I would think you can never get their people to the polls.
Does it help someone like Preckwinkle that Bill Daley said last week that he wanted to open up the Constitution state and be able to mess with public pensions? Does that help someone who's endorsed by the unions?
Sure, if it motivates them to get out to vote. Anything that will get your people to the polls, yeah, that absolutely.
The likelihood that Daley wins is probably going to be attributed in large part to the fact that he's got the most money.
And name. Good and bad.
Yeah, we were talking about it yesterday.
People
yeah.
just don't tune in that much. They see, I talk to a lot of people. Oh, Daley. And it's almost like, yeah, City was pretty good when there were Daleys in charge. I'm not saying that that's going to carry the day, but that's what I hear.
Well, what about
people.
His qualification? Because the guy's done everything. I mean, he's, you know, he's done the highest levels of politics in Washington. He certainly knows the city. He's, you know, he's got a brother and a dad that are famous for being Chicago mayors, great or otherwise, depending on how you see it. I mean, the guy's ready for the job, isn't he?
Yeah, I think a lot of these candidates are ready for the job. The debate we held a couple weeks ago for Lincoln for me, there were some pretty impressive, you know, Gary Chico, all of them were, I thought, were very impressive. So it's not a case where we just have a bunch of bad candidates. We actually have a lot of really good candidates. But there's another theory, too, that the people that are known, there's a big number of undecideds, will show up and vote for somebody that's not so known.
Yeah. Well, Steve and I, we talked about it yesterday, the opportunity for low turnout because people see that there are 14 candidates, and they see, you know what, it's going to be a runoff, so I don't even need to be involved in the first part of this election.
Yeah, and I'm not sure people quite even understand what the runoff is, but there are a lot of aldermanic races, which will drive, you know, very local races, which should drive people to the polls.
So you're talking about yesterday, wacky aldermanic races. What's your wackiest?
Oh, man, they're all...
I'm fascinated by what's happening in Southwest Side when you talk about Ed Burke running for re-election, but also Marty Quinn in the 13th. Those are interesting old-school aldermen who are facing tough challenges.
Well, changing demographics. We saw that in the primary a year ago or so, where the Hispanics actually had a very, very good night. But probably maybe the Tunney race... Wow, well, there's a lot of money in
Tunney excitement. Versus the Cubs.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the way it's been. But that I think that's another interesting. They're all interesting. I think all but six are contested.
It's
right?
So good. It really is. You go down a list. I'm going to do it for the Download podcast where we do all 50 races. Some are unopposed, but there's
those
some
are little
great
cities
stuff.
Too. Anywhere yeah. else, those are little cities when you think about
Rogers
the
Park with Joe Moore, John Arena in the 45th and Jefferson Park down, like you said, Tom Tunney in Wrigleyville. There's a lot of I guess what is it just the day we live in 2019 that it's just more contentious because there's more media, there's more opportunity to get your word out in different ways than you could 10, 20. Years ago?
You know, primarily Democratic because where we sit. But, yeah, I think there's a lot of energy in the Democratic Party for a lot of things. I think that drives a lot of people wanting to get involved, which is good.
Speak for a second to the aldermanic side of this because the aldermen, you know, control the city in the same way the mayor does, and the mayor has to be strong enough to control the aldermen. Does the Solis-Burke scandal have any impact on this?
On the races?
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's had a huge impact on the mayor race. Down below,
but
that, I'm
it
not
just
quite
seems
sure.
to be that everybody is going. Wasn't me. It was him. Yeah. It was him and the other him. So, I mean, if they're all saying the same thing, how does it impact it?
Impact
the mayoral race. If all the candidates
those that
are saying
those
the same
that
thing.
Are closest aligned with that group, I think get tarred with the brush of.
Isn't that Chico?
No, not so much. I think I know Eric's not here to defend her, and I'm not saying that against her, but I think she's probably maybe Preckwinkle
taking Mendoza.
Susana Mendoza and Tony Preck. I think it's fair or not, but I think they've taken the biggest hit from that.
If the mayoral race goes over 50%, 50% plus one vote, I will run down Michigan Avenue in my tidy whities.
Wow.
Wait, that's not an incentive.
Wait, I was going to say, can
that's
we
really a disincentive.
It's not great for economic development, Steve. You might
it's probably not good for the city, really, when I think about it.
They won't let you in water.
Tell you what, I'll come up with another payoff for the bet.
How about if it happens, you won't run down the street?
And no.
Never show us your tidy whities.
Boy, I tell you.
Well, yeah, I gave you a Speedo for Christmas. You fitting into it yet? I mean, you lost a ton of weight, so you look great.
Yeah, no, I do. I wear it all the time.
Do you?
Yeah, I'm wearing it now.
Listen to Pat Brady.
Full disclosure, Pat Brady's here. Full disclosure, Pat Brady tipped me off on the Mueller report coming out before anybody else was talking about it. You want to reveal your sources?
CNN, Steve. Sorry.
Is that what is CNN?
I know you're in the bubble.
Hoping, I was hoping you. I was hoping you had some inside guy or girl. Okay, so Wolf
CNN
Blitzer
alert.
Is your source.
Exactly.
All right, so Mueller's report may well come out next week, or Chuck Todd says maybe it won't. But let's say it does come out next week. If Bob Barr releases only what he's legally obligated to release, why is that wrong?
Because the country in an investigation involves the propriety of our presidential election deserves to know if there was collusion or conspiracy to defraud the public. I think there's a public interest, and that's why we should know.
Now,
I think he's going to. I know this is a big talk. Now, he's going to let this report out to the extent he can, consistent with national security concerns. I can't imagine this thing's not going to.
My guess is we are going to see the majority of it, but a lot of it will be redacted.
Yeah, it's. I read some over the weekend, some of the pleadings that are redacted in this case and some of the other cases.
God, you know, I'd have a good time.
It's really tough to get. Those redacted things are kind of irritating.
Yeah, because it's tough to get a sense of what's being said.
Yeah, right when you get to the most important point, it's redacted.
So here's two possibilities. One is that there's enough in it that impeachment hearings have to start immediately. The other is that Donald Trump is in some way vindicated, or there's not enough to go after Donald Trump. What are the reactions in either case?
Well, a lot of it's going to depend on the president, if history's any judge, I don't think it's going to be vindication, though. I think it's going to be some pretty bad facts, but those facts may not rise to the level of proof beyond a reasonable doubt in a criminal court. We've said all along, conspiracy with the Russians or conspiracy with anybody to interfere with the election, very difficult to prove. But we're not quite there. Let me take a step back. Chuck was talking about he thinks there's going to be another indictment. And the fact that he has not talked to Donald Trump is, to me, as a former federal prosecutor, I don't think makes a difference. You send them a letter, you say, this is what we're going to do, you're a target, and rarely do they actually come in and talk. So, but that's going to have to happen in the next 3 or 4 days. Literally tomorrow, you have to go to the grand, because the last thing you do is go to the grand jury, present your indictment, and ask for a true bill of indictment.
Is there a sealed indictment that we don't know about?
Could be, but that's why we don't know about it.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. It's possible it could exist.
Yeah, it could be sealed. But there is.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Sherlock Holmes.
I'm going to charge you for that there.
Now, on the flip side of that, what if it's a Democrat's response, speaking strictly in political terms here, if there is some form of vindication that Trump could claim?
Well, hopefully the Democrats, and I think Senator Durbin's been a great leader on this, saying we have to, this report has been done by the best investigator and prosecutor probably in the history of the country.
Yeah, accept the results.
Accept the results and move on. Will that happen? No, because they've already started to tee up these investigations in the House since they took control of the House, which to me are going to be, I think the Democrats are really getting close to people have investigation fatigue.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like what the Republicans did in the 90s with Bill Clinton at the impeachment. When Clinton gets impeached and leaves with a 56% approval rating, I think you got to be real careful on how much of this you keep going.
What are the chances that Donald Trump knows what's in the report? I mean, he gets to ask a lot of questions here. He gets a lot of latitude as president of the United States. What are the chances he has a sense of what's in it? Or I could even extend this question out. What are the chances he's going to ask for political asylum in Vietnam and not come back?
I don't think they'll release this when he's off. In a foreign country.
Yeah, you could wait.
That'd be a huge mistake by Mueller, who's a patriot. I don't see that happen.
I have two legal questions for you. One, Andrew McCabe. Interesting to me because he is saying all this stuff that people are seizing upon, but then also at the same time they're dismissing it because he's a proven leaker and alleged liar. Well, is there legal precedent in what he's talking about? And as Chuck Todd said, should Congress pick this up?
Yeah, I think Chuck Todd was right that if this conversation did occur at the highest levels of the Justice Department, which is a pretty powerful agency, about invoking the 25th Amendment, we need to know what happened. Now, I could see a conversation where you are concerned about either he's a tool of the president of the Russians, or maybe he's mentally incompetent to be president, where you'd say, well, can we invoke the 25th Amendment? But the suggestion I'm going to wire up and go do an overhear in the press, just that's so far out of bounds that we need to know. And I watched all the McCabe interviews, and he has a credibility problem.
The other question just has to do, you talked about tax returns, and you know, we're seeing a lot about Democrats trying to push for tax returns. Is that something that Congress could force if legally to get them to release that?
I'm not sure if they can, but more important to me, even though the Mueller investigation might be coming to a close, there are a bunch of investigations going on in the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Central District of New York. I guarantee you they have Donald Trump's tax returns.
Out of time. Always goes far too fast. Where do you work, Pat?
Can I plug the Stairwalk?
First, where do you work?
Next Generation Strategy.
And not plug the Stairwalk.
The Stairwalk that Dave's doing, the actionlung.org in a couple weeks. Everybody signed up. I'm in. Yep. Absolutely.
All right. Look at that.
American Lung Association, Climb for Life.
We call it the Stair Climb. Stairwalk. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe that changed what you think you're getting into.
I'm doing one more step and donating one more dollar than Ben Bradley.
That seems right.
Yeah. Ben Bradley and Lourdes are going to be on tomorrow with us at 9:40.
Are they coming in?
No, they're going to be on the phone.
You know why? Because TV people are lazy and shiftless. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you. See you guys.
Coming up, Stories of Matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Or kiss me, kiss me good.
Live from Los Angeles, Dean Richards.
That song is funny because it says, hey, Hollywood, and that's where I am.
Wow, that's crazy.
That's crazy. That's ironical.
The life you lead, the swinging, swirling show business life you lead. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Is Mary Hart in the room there with you and the other show business?
Who, Mary Hart?
That's the only reference I had off the top of my head.
Yes, and Walter Winchell's also here, too.
I was trying to think of anyone doing current entertainment television. All I came up
with... Nancy O'Dell.
I know, he's a friend of ours. Yeah. All I came up with was Mary Hart and Pat O'Brien.
Yeah, Janet Davies is somewhere in the hotel.
Really?
Yeah, she's I'm out here. We saw the new Captain Marvel movie last night. Yes.
Wait, Dean, are you kidding about Janet Davies, or is she really there?
No, she goes out to those.
No, she's here because this Captain Marvel movie. It's Marvel, which is owned by Disney, and Disney owns ABC, which is the owner of.
And Janet's always trying to get away from Mark Giangreco because he's always making out with her.
Right.
So you know,
right? I got to admit, I did try last night myself.
It's understandable.
He's irresistible.
When do you see the movie, Dean?
I saw it last night.
Oh, nice. When do you put the review out for
today? How was it?
I'm not at liberty to give you a full review at this time.
What do you think? This is Captain Marvel. Come on, tell us.
Marvel, I love it. Look.
Mary Hart, Pat O'Brien, and I want to know.
It's action-packed, as I can tell you right now.
Okay. Oh, man.
Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. Are they married yet or not?
They are not married yet. Oh. But there's a lot of rumor going on that since she is now single, she's no longer engaged. That Bradley Cooper may be her date to the Oscars on Sunday.
Well, that should help the rumors.
Everybody's been saying that. What chemistry they had, how steamy it was in their scenes, and when they sing together, and when they appeared at award shows together, seems to be some kind of special chemistry.
You know, that Arizona sky is burning in her eyes. I mean, why wouldn't he bring her?
But I don't know how to say her. He's got a girlfriend.
Very serious girlfriend.
Yes. Well, you know, hey, wouldn't that be the first time that something like that happened in Hollywood?
What about love? What about love? Come on.
They may be here in the hotel for all I know. Everybody's here at this hotel.
Edward R. Murrow, Walter Winchell, they're all there.
That's right. Cups in it for some reason. Who would have guessed?
I believe Bradley Cooper's girlfriend / partner, they've been together for 3 or 4 years now, is Irina Shayk. I think that's how you pronounce it.
That's clearly a fake name.
She's a Russian supermodel and obviously, in the tank for Trump.
Yeah, aren't we all?
All right, so we'll do more on the Oscars tomorrow. An R. Kelly update?
R. Kelly was announced yesterday. I don't know if he was required to, but he vacated the building that he had, where his recording studio is housed in Chicago. A couple of days ago, a judge limited his access to the building, restricted the number of hours in which he could be there recording. So he just said, heck with it. And he's not going to be using that studio anymore.
And the bottom line is that he is just at kind of the beginning of the trouble here. We don't have any indication that this is going to end.
Well, yeah, this is the other big, another big national story that's, here in based in Chicago, the R. Kelly story and the Jussie Smollett story that, had some huge developments yesterday. But, this R. Kelly story, probably is also going to play out, and who knows in what way. But I guess this recording studio is in bad shape. It had 66 building code violations. And the judge ordered. You know, this is rather unprecedented. It's a recording studio, and a lot of performers, a lot of recording artists, like to work at night. And you know, this basically said that the judge's order basically said that they could only use it from 9 in the morning until 9 at night. Yeah, so
and the curfew. It's a recording studio curfew.
And you know this too, because you know you've been around entertainers. But R. Kelly, it's not private information. He's public. I remember an article back in Vibe or one of the big article about his habits and how he goes to work at midnight and he comes. You know, he's done at 8 o'clock in the morning. That's a lot of musicians do that.
It's not unusual at all for performers. They work at night. Their concerts are at night. They record at night. They do everything at night.
R. Kelly's almost our age. He needs to start getting to bed earlier.
and eat more roughage.
All right. Is the Jesse Smollett thing a big deal in L.A.?
It's all over the news. Not quite like it is in Chicago, but yes, it's the lead story everywhere here.
All right, so Jesse Smollett, there's going to be a press conference at 9 o'clock about what's to come of him. He is in, last word anyway, he was in custody. I don't think he's made bail yet.
Morons, are they ready to apologize to the internet? Yesterday you said it was the internet.
I don't think we have anything to apologize for. All we said was that we were waiting, that we thought that people should wait until there was something official, which happened yesterday.
And the internet, the internet has a bad behavior problem. The internet strikes out, lashes out with any basis in fact. Now that we know the facts, I don't even think the internet was right because they jumped out early.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So.
Jesse was taken into custody this morning at the First District. He was taken to 26th in California, which is where he is now. As you said, that Eddie Johnson is going to have a press conference, and we'll learn a lot more about what exactly happened with all of this. But Jesse Smollett's legal team is saying that they believe in the presumption of innocence. They're going to vigorously defend him. Who knows what's going to happen next with that. But also the producers of Empire are saying that they are trying to decide what to do now, because they have been very, very supportive of him since all of this started, and they're trying to decide whether or not they will suspend him, whether or not he'll be fired. They don't know. 20th Century Fox isn't officially commenting on it all, but there is talk that he may at least be suspended from the show until all of this is worked out.
The obvious question is why? Why do it? Does anybody have any theory about that that's jumped to mind? And is this something that you've said, well, maybe?
Only all the internet speculation. I mean, people seem to think, the most popular being that he just wanted to get some attention for himself. He wanted to get his name out there, which doesn't make one bit of sense. It's kind of sick. And I'll tell you what really angers me about this whole thing is that he was claiming that a hate crime took place, that homophobic behavior took place. He made the statement that the two perpetrators were yelling, "This is MAGA country right now." All of those things do happen to people all the time. Hate crimes take place all of the time against gay people, against black people, against Jewish people. There is no shortage of hatred that takes violent hate crimes which take place as a result of all of those things. So all that's valid. But what Jesse Smollett has done is trivialize when legitimate claims come up where people really are beaten up and treated badly and anti-Semitic behavior takes place and all of these things. This trivializes that because of, for whatever stupid reason, that he apparently did all of this. So, that's a shame. And, people, there's a rise in white supremacy that's going on. All of the things that Jesse Smollett said happened to him really do happen. It seriously happened to people.
But he makes everything worse by faking it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, all right, get back to your business with Janet Davies, whatever that means. And just practice this if you run into Bradley Cooper. Bradley Cooper's girlfriend's full name, full Russian name, is
Irina Veryevna Sheklislamova. Say it with me, Dean. Irina Veryevna
Veryevna
Sheklislamova.
Shake it like it, you break it.
I think that's right. All right, have fun. That's Dean Richards, and at 8:19. 8:22, Dean back for a full blast of more on entertainment tomorrow. But we want to take a minute here to talk with Rick Hahn, White Sox GM, or your White Sox radio station, as you know. And after losing out on Manny Machado, the obvious question to start with Rick Hahn is this. Okay, all right. Who are we going to get now? Rick Hahn, Chicago White Sox, joins us. You know, look, obviously we're Sox fans, and obviously as the flagship, we would have liked to be talking about something different today. But instead, we're talking about what I think, Rick, is good news, and that's who we're going to get now.
Well, I can't give you an answer exactly to that. All I can tell you is that obviously we were very aggressive in our pursuit of Manny, and despite it not turning out the way any of us had hoped, it certainly doesn't deter us from continuing to be aggressive. And I don't know when exactly this money is going to be spent, but I can assure you it will be spent, and it will be spent towards furthering our goal of putting us in position to win multiple championships. It's going to come down to a question of timing, though. Is there going to be the opportunity to do that this offseason, which we realize some people and some people's opinion, it's a little premature to be that aggressive entering year three of a rebuild, or will it happen next offseason or at a trade deadline? The fact is that the resources are there, and at the right time, we're going to continue to try to convert on pieces that improve our long-term outlook even more.
Rick, when you think about this, and you know, there was a lot of talk yesterday about just how shocked you were and how shocked Kenny Williams were and the whole White Sox management. You know, for you personally, to be in a situation where you put an offer on the table and you want to get a free agent to come to your squad, how does it feel to not get that done?
Look, there's clearly a sense of disappointment and a sense of missing out and realizing what could have been. And that, honestly, that's no different for me than any Sox fan. I mean, fundamentally, we are all fans, which is part of why all of us who work for clubs got into the business originally. So we feel that same sense of loss or that same anger or disappointment or whatever title you want to put on that emotion. We're unfortunately not immune to it. The good news for me, at least, in the way I can get by this and the way I've started to already get by this, is I get the privilege of walking in the big league clubhouse this morning and hearing Jose Abreu address the club and Tim Anderson address the club and Ricky Renteria's energy and look around the room and see Eloy sitting there and Luis Robert a few lockers down. And can see with my own eyes on a daily basis where this thing is going and what the future looks like. I got the opportunity. I'm going to sit in on the minor league minicamp meeting later this week, and that is going to further reinforce how much we've already accomplished in the first 2 years of this rebuild. And I also know in conversations with Jerry and with Kenny and with Jeremy Haber, our assistant GM, and others around here, we've got, you know, the mindset of continuing to be aggressive in this realm. And it's not just going to be these guys that we can see around this camp who are going to form a great core for a long, long time, but it's going to be other additions that we pursue in the coming months and years that are going to continue to enhance this position.
Talking with Rick Hahn, look, having too much money to spend is a good problem to have. Thank you, Jerry. but does that mean you're in the Bryce Harper? That's what happens when you get up early.
Harpy.
Bryce Harper sweepstakes?
The only thing I can assure you is that we will not be signing Bryce Harvey. I promise you that. I'm not allowed to talk about any specific free agents. I'm out of the prognostication business. I'm not going to speculate anymore about whether we're going to be able to convert on a specific target or not. But I will tell you whether we make any a single addition for the next few months or next few weeks rather or not. This money is earmarked to making us better for the long term.
Yeah,
it happens. I don't know.
I don't want to put you in a jam, but if Bryce Harper called today and said, "Man, it'd be swell to be in Chicago," could you take the call?
I take anybody's call. You know that.
Well
you
played
that.
By
especially
you.
When it's a premium, especially
well
when it's a superstar player.
No, by we, you.
I've got players from a lower echelon calling as well, and I take their calls. So certainly my number is well known and wide open.
Okay. Rick, you mentioned some of the youngsters that are in the White Sox clubhouse this spring training, and it's impressive to think about all the names. Are we going to see most of those names in 2019? Is that the expectation for this year in the rebuild that we're going to start to see some of these superstars making on the field?
I think we're going to start seeing some of them. I think Ricky put it best the other day that some of the flowers are starting to bloom, but perhaps not quite the entire bouquet. Eloy, we obviously expect him to spend the vast majority, if not all, of the season up in Chicago. Dylan Cease, the minor league pitcher of the year last year, we expect will, you know, similar to Kopech, force his way into Chicago at some point. And then we have our catching crew of Collins and Zavala will be at AAA and obviously just a phone call away, but there's another sort of critical mass of guys who are most likely going to start, if not spend the bulk of the year in Double A Birmingham. Mm-hmm. We've promoted guys out of Double A before, and if they put themselves in the position to force us, then we'll do it again this year. But we're not, and especially on a day like today, it's easy to be like, you know what? Luis Robert gets off to a great first half. We're going to come see what he can do and get this thing moving.
Right.
We got to resist that temptation. We got to remain focused on the long term. We've been extremely diligent over the first two plus years of this rebuild about prioritizing player development and getting guys to Chicago when they are ready, not just because we're hungry to see them in Chicago. So some of these guys being in Double A and above are going to wind up landing in Chicago.
Yeah.
But if I had to bet on, you know, the two most likely, or at least the probable first two, would be Eloy and Dylan Cease.
The other name thrown around in the newspapers this week, Nick Madrigal, who of course the first round pick, who just doesn't strike out, which is impressive for a youngster and a guy that easily, because of that skill, can make it in the majors faster than others who have to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
So is it possible that we could see someone who you didn't necessarily project for a couple of years make it to the big league squad because they have skills that easily adapt to major league pitching?
It's certainly possible. What we try to do is a couple times over the course of the year, and now is one of the times, is set a individual player development plan for each of these guys based upon, you know, what not only their skill set, but what they've accomplished so far, both from an objective standpoint in terms of whether it's innings pitched or plate appearances at a given level and performance, or as well as sort of more subjective evaluation of their tools and how they'd hold up at the higher level. And we try to map that out. Chris Getz, our farm director, and his staff get very specific with each player and try to map out the plan for the entire year. So on a guy like Madrigal, 1 year out of the draft, that plan would likely not include a taste of Chicago in his first full season. That said, we revisit these plans midway through the year, and we make adjustments accordingly based upon what the guys are showing. So with a kid with such an advanced hit tool and such strong defense and plus-plus makeup, we can't rule out him coming more quickly than we map out. But initially, especially at the start of the season, we're going to map out something that's mindful of needing getting enough repetition at the minor league level before advancing.
We'll let you go here, but there's two things I think White Sox fans need to hear, and you've already mm-hmm. said one of them, and that is that we have money to spend. We're going to spend it, but we're going to spend it smart, and that means we may not spend it tomorrow, but we are going to spend it. That's a good thing to hear. Secondarily, mm-hmm. though, I think White Sox fans need to hear that there's not some sort of block in recruiting guys to come here, because that's a rumor I'm seeing on a lot of baseball sites and certainly the internet, and a lot of people who don't have opinions suddenly do have opinions. Speak to the recruitment part.
Yeah, I don't. There's some weird little potholes that came up overnight from what I was our head of communications, Scott Reifert, shared with me earlier. You know, this notion that the White Sox have an organizational philosophy against out clauses is an example. And because of that organizational philosophy, they're never going to land a premier free agent. First of all, there is no organizational philosophy. I have no idea where that came from. It's obviously a very player-friendly clause, and it's one that in recent years you've seen teams starting to sort of ameliorate a little bit by having it balanced with perhaps a mutual option type structure instead of the unilateral opt-out. But it's not as if we have that as a complete block against signing these guys. So from a recruitment standpoint, these decisions on these mega deals are very complex. There's a lot of factors that go in, not just the length of the contract and the guarantee of the contract, but the upside, the opt-outs, as we talked about, the no-trade protection, and the flexibility that each side enjoys over the near decade-long commitment. Any one of those things, as well as family preference, relationship, chance to win in the home city and all that, any of those things could be the deciding factor for an individual free agent. And from our standpoint, we don't have really limits in any of those areas. We have the ability to balance the interests of both sides and put together the best deal that both sides could be comfortable with. So I don't see that as there being this sort of poison pill out there that's going to prevent us from closing. In the end, we line up the valuation and try to come up with a deal that is good and both sides can live with. We thought we got extraordinarily close with this specific player, but in the end, this is free agency. These guys have worked extremely hard to get to the point where they can make their choice based upon whatever they want. I think we made the choice very hard on this player, but ultimately it didn't go our way. It's not going to stop us from trying again and ultimately closing on one of these guys when we align them correctly.
I'll tell you right now, part of the problem is Tom Skilling. He could have changed this weather. He could have made it more West Coast-like. All right, so listen, we appreciate the time. We know how busy things get, and we're very happy, as you know, to be the White Sox flagship, and I know you're happy with us. But Bryce Harpe is not coming here anytime soon.
No Bryce Harvey. That's the only thing I can rule out on this call.
All right. Thank you, Rick Hahn, White Sox GM. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
See you later. Bryce Harpe or Harvey, they're both not coming?
No, unfortunately, they have.
Because they're both strong
players. They both have Scott Boras, so he's not coming to Chicago.
Well, that explains it. Mark Carmen, I got 10 seconds here. Any chance of getting Bryce Harper?
You don't want Bryce Harper, no.
Okay. All right. The word has been spoken.
Overrated. Overpaid.
Later on, is Mark Carmen in trouble at home for talking about his fiance yesterday on the show? Stand by for that. We'll come back with the headlines at 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
It's 8:39. Mark Carmen's here for Dave Ennett. An awful breaking sports news story. What is it? Jim Boeheim, from legendary coach of the Syracuse Orangemen. What happened?
He struck and killed a man, reportedly, Steve, walking outside his vehicle on Interstate 690 last night around midnight. This is from Syracuse.com. The man in his 30s had been in the car with four others near Thompson Road in Syracuse when their vehicle crashed for unknown reasons.
I know that exact area. I grew up in that part of the world. 690 is like a beltway around Syracuse, and it's not well lit in spots. And if somebody's walking along the road, presumably dark clothing or something, an accident like that can happen. But that's a horrible story.
Yeah, it says the man at some point got out of his vehicle. Boeheim, driving by at that time, hits the pedestrian, and Boeheim is cooperating with the investigation.
Oh, terrible.
Right?
Really terrible. All right. Coming up at 9 o'clock in the news, we expect the Jussie Smollett press conference to happen, and we'll pick that up in the news, and we'll carry it for as long as it's relevant. I don't know if there's going to be a lot of things we don't know, but we'll listen in.
Well, it'll be the first time that, besides Twitter, that the police will be on the record, so it's going to be interesting to see what they say, right?
And also coming up after 9, we have convention passes for the Blackhawks. David Hochberg will be in. Obviously, we're keeping an eye on this I don't even know what you'd call it, this gathering of priests and dealing with
Sexual abuse of kids in the Catholic Church. So that's coming up as well.
Yeah, Pope Francis opening up a summit on sexual abuse, and that's happening now, which is nice. It dovetails into what we're talking about in this segment, which is about the second annual Religion in the Frame Film Festival at Facets, which is a film festival that looks at religious themes and films that explore religion. And in studio with us is the curator, Gretchen Helfrich. Gretchen, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Justin.
Whoops, oh, wrong. I got to get your microphone on, Gretchen. Sorry, there you are.
Hey there.
Gretchen, do films that we don't hear about take on the controversial stuff in religion? They seem to.
Well, they take on the controversial stuff in religion. You know, a film like Spotlight took on the sex abuse case.
Right.
But films investigate religious ideas and religious themes in all kinds of ways, sometimes explicitly with stories about religion. But then other times it's a little more subtle, and you see religious ideas enacted in films, even though the film doesn't have overtly religious content.
Right, as opposed to a message out of Spotlight because it was real-world events.
Sure, and Spotlight was literally about
the
sex abuse scandal. But, you know, can I give an example?
Sure, of course.
So one of the films we're having in the festival is Slaughterhouse-Five, you know, which is a novel about World War II, about the firebombing of Dresden.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that have to do with religion? Well, okay, so war can raise all kinds of questions that are the same questions religion addresses. But that particular novel and movie... they have a guy who does this thing called time tripping, where he's moving through time, and he comes to live with the horrible experiences of his life by coming to this conclusion that every moment of his life exists all the time, and you just focus on the good and you don't focus on the bad. And that's actually a Buddhist conception of
time. Is that right?
Yeah. Now I'm not.
I got to reread the book. It's been a while, apparently.
I'm certainly not the expert who's going to talk about that, but yeah, that's why we're doing
One of the great things about the film festival is that you will be doing Q&As after the films with religious scholars from the Martin Marty Center at the University of Chicago. Whether or not it's overt or subtle or the subtext of a film, these are the kind of conversations you'll have after the films.
That's right. That's the whole purpose of the festival is to present these films, but then also to the audience gets to engage in a conversation with someone who knows something about the topic and can bring a little bit more and bring a little more depth to the experience of going to the movies.
I love this idea because these films that we'll talk about the films that were chosen for this year, but morality plays. I mean, it's almost become a cliche in films. Like it becomes almost all storylines, whether it be a kids movie or an action film, like in the Marvel universe. Morality and ideas around that, which is a big part of religion and spirituality, they're front and center. So it's not a novel concept or a niche concept to say that religion is in all films that we see.
I don't know if I'd go as far as to say all films, but maybe. But certainly there are religious ideas out there in films, in places you wouldn't see them. I mean, you know, if you think about religion, it does try to be about everything.
Its
goal is to cover every aspect of life, whether we buy into it or not, and whether the people who practice the religion are willing to accept that all-encompassing idea. That's the goal of a lot of religions.
Ethan Hawke was in here not too long ago. I like Ethan Hawke a lot, and he's a feature of one of your movies, right?
Yeah, he sure is. First Reformed on Saturday night.
What can you tell us about that?
Well, we're going to be talking with...
Oscar-nominated.
Have you seen the film?
I have not. I have, yeah.
You have?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Paul Schrader is the writer of Taxi Driver.
Yeah, sure.
And he wrote this film and directed this film, and he came through on the download. And we
so I'm guessing a laugh a minute? not quite, huh?
Yeah,
so that film is a little more explicitly religious in that Ethan Hawke plays a minister who is undergoing kind of a crisis of faith, but also a sort of general personal crisis. I mean, he's kind of, I think I would say he's lived his life badly.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to figure out what it means to have this religious calling, to have a religious position and a religious vocation. It's an intense film. Oh, my gosh. You should come and see it. You'll be exhausted by the end of it.
I usually am anyway. But that film makes sense.
But that's a great example of a film that doesn't... I mean, because religion is a big part of the actual plot. But it's really about all the things that are happening around us. What's the morality when it comes to pollution or environmental issues or everything that on the face of it... flies in the face of religion and what's being taught to, you know, to the people who are practicing the most, you know, religiously, if you will.
Right. So that we're after the film, we're going to be talking with Wilhelmine Otten, who is the director of the Martin Marty Center, which is one of the organizations that sponsors the festival. And she's a Christian theologian and also a historian of Christian theology. So, you know, we're going to be tangling with and trying to unpack a little bit these ideas about what it means to be a minister. I almost said priest. He's not a priest. He's a minister. What your responsibilities are beyond your church to the larger community. I mean, you know, we live in a country where a lot of people are motivated by their religion to engage with the mm-hmm. larger community on all sides of the political spectrum. You know, people come to community with their religion. So I think it's really important to have better conversations about
sure.
religion.
You would like the, I think you would like that movie because well, sure. it is, they start the movie off where a parishioner comes in, he goes, I'm about to have a baby, and I don't want to have the baby because why, as a Christian, why would I want to bring a new body
into this world
that is corrupt and against my teachings? And that's the premise that starts the conversation, the movie. It's a very interesting
forces the
concept.
Pastor to examine his own life.
Yeah,
on a different
yeah.
level.
It takes him a while to get there, but yeah, that is what starts it
so
off.
So we're living in a time where evangelical Christians have found a lot of reasons to defend a guy who has exhibited no moral tenets of Christianity whatsoever. If you could find
I can't
one,
think who you're speaking of.
Be the first caller if you can find one. Is that something that I mean? I have to imagine those movies are being worked on right now because what a great plot line for a movie that you never thought you'd have to make.
Well, so okay, so there's certainly nothing in the festival that is the story of this person you may be speaking of.
Yeah, rhymes with Donald Trump.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think that you know the idea of hypocrisy, which is what you're hinting at. You know, the idea that you would. The question of how you would translate your religious values into your political values, you know, because what you're talking about is a breakdown. It's like you're saying you have these political values, but they don't seem to represent, they don't seem to reflect your moral commitments.
Right.
Well, so how do you do that? And it happens in different ways at different times. One of the films that I'm really looking forward to is a film called Black Robe, which is actually, I mean, this may not sound relevant to today, but I actually think it really is. It's set in the 17th century, Jesuit priests going into Canada to convert native people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the whole idea of using power to set a religious agenda and to say, like, I'm going to control you religiously. Hello, we're not done with that.
Sure.
That is so still around.
Right.
So there's just so many ways in which films are exploring questions about religion that are really relevant.
These are really important stories to tell, but in a time, I had a discussion about this with someone yesterday about, especially with millennials, the decline in Christianity and churches closing left and right. Is it difficult to get a major studio to make a hardcore religious film now because of the risk of people not showing interest?
Oh, I don't know the answer to that.
Or does it still come down to great storytelling?
I imagine it still comes down to great storytelling. But, you know, it's always controversial when you try to tell a religious story. When you try to tell, for example, a Bible story.
Sure.
Or you know, the story of Jesus. There's always going to be controversy because a film necessarily is going to be one version of that story, one interpretation, mm-hmm. one set of human beings interpreting that story.
But they're all right. Not super religious. Like the one film about the grieving widow, that isn't a go to church movie. You know,
well, none of these beat you over the head with religion, do they?
But they're not following a. She's not a a nun. You know, like I mean. It's
oh no,
not,
no,
you
but
know,
she does turn to religion.
Yeah, for
she turns to religion in her grief, and so it's about religion and the way it functions in that society and how the people are using it.
Gretchen, what are the films that are going to be? Which ones should we be looking out for? That are going to be part of this festival coming up here.
Okay, you should be looking out for all of them.
Good call, curator.
That's right. Okay, let me see if I can get them in the right order. So the festival opens Friday night with The Passion of Joan of Arc, which mm-hmm. is a 1928 silent film, which is, you should see it whether you care about religion. If you like movies, this is such an essential classic movie. But we're going to be talking with someone, Francoise Meltzer from the University of Chicago Divinity School, about the figure of Joan of Arc and like how her religious commitments just made everyone so angry and why she was such a problem in that way. So then First Reformed is on Saturday night. That's the Ethan Hawke film.
So far, you're two for two. I'm looking at the schedule. You're two for two so far.
Oh, okay.
In order.
Oh, now it's going to get bad because, honestly, I printed out the schedule this morning. My printer ran out of ink.
All right, I'll give it to you. Under the Moonlight.
Under the Moonlight, which is an Iranian film about a young man who's about to become a cleric and starts to experience things that make him rethink what a religious life means.
Ushpizin, is that what I'm saying?
Ushpizin is a really interesting film.
That was impressive, by the way, that you know that pronunciation.
I just shot in the dark. But yeah.
It's an Israeli film, and it was shot in an ultra-Orthodox neighborhood where very few films are shot with ultra-Orthodox performers.
Interesting.
And it's about a couple who used to not be religious and then became religious, and their old life tries to intrude back in, and it's really fascinating.
And the last one that we hadn't talked about, because we talked about Slaughterhouse-Five and The Black Robe, Secret Sunshine.
So Secret Sunshine is the Korean film about a woman who is a widow and, among other things, turns to religion as part of her grieving process. But
that actress won the Sundance Best Actress Award for that year.
I think it's an interesting take, right? Because so many times when people suffer a great loss, they're mad at God. And they go in the other direction. Mm-hmm. And unless I misunderstand what we're doing here in Secret Sunshine, she's trying to find reason for all of it, right?
Well, she is. The movie's more complicated than that. Okay. There's a lot going on.
Well, I'm very uncomfortable.
That's okay. No, there's a lot going on.
So I'd like to jump right to the uncomfortable.
That's all it says
part.
On the website. It's just Secret Sunshine. There's a lot going on.
No, there's a word. But there's a word for what you're talking about. And if I'm not mistaken, the word is theodicy, which means I'm trying to understand God when bad things happen.
Oh, look. Hmm. Well, listen. You've already paid your way because that's a word I don't know. Theodicy, our word of the day.
The second annual Religion in the Frame Film Festival is at Facets Multimedia, which is on Fullerton and Lakeview, running in Lincoln Park, running through the 28th of February. Starts this Friday, the 22nd. Gretchen Helfrich is a curator, and she'll be hosting Q&As after each film with religious scholars from the Martin Marty Center in the University of Chicago. Gretchen, thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much.
Are you still doing your BEZ show?
Nope, I'm not.
Okay, well, if you get another one, come back and plug it.
Okay, I will do. I'll come plug everything.
Just trying to be fair to whatever plugs you need to plug.
She left radio to be a lawyer.
Is that right?
Do you want me to plug my clients?
Yeah, we can plug your firm.
Yeah. Zilliak Law. Why not?
Right? Okay. There you go.
Yeah. I was going to say, when you were talking about the accident, I was like, you could be this guy's lawyer. You're doing a good job.
We didn't see as an ambulance chaser coming in. We won't see you that way going out either.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
$8.56, Hawks Convention Pass is coming up. Margarita trivia on the way. David Hochberg will try to tell you how to make best use of your money so that, in fact, you can buy or refi a house. We'll get a little education on finance and things after 9:30 from him. And when we come back in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, Steve Grzanich will update you on things. And we presume that, Steve, that smaller press conference is probably going to happen right in the middle of the newscast, right?
Well, you know, these things happen. It's 50-50 whether or not they start on time. But they said 9 o'clock, and we're expecting the police superintendent, along with the Central Command, Area Central Detectives Commander, Edward Wodnicki. So we're hoping for 9 o'clock, but we'll watch it here. And if it comes during the newscast, we'll try to bring you as much of it as we can.
Yeah, and we'll carry it as long as it's relevant. And there's some new information there. 8:57, Steve's next. Hakey Larson is production manager for Jimmy Buffett and the Coral Reefer Band, Big Night Friday night at the United Center. I believe Hakey's going to be at the game. And excuse me if we have to interrupt here. I know you understand the flow of the news and things. But this is pretty cool. Margaritaville night with the Blackhawks. Peggy, do we have it?
Margaritaville night with the Blackhawks, and what better way to celebrate National Margarita Day but in the Windy City on a cold winter day with our favorite hockey team on the road with Jimmy and the Coral Reefer Band, thanks to Kaner coming to Jimmy shows at the Stanley Cup, and of course our honorary brother and tour roadie Jay Blunk, vice president of Blackhawks. So
exactly.
We're excited.
And well, the video is hysterical. If you haven't seen it, ChicagoBlackhawks.com, and also you see the commercial running on TV with Jimmy going nuts doing a Kaner goal celebration, and I assume that was his living room.
No, actually, we were on location. We were visiting our new Margaritaville Hotel Resort in Orlando, and that was the Jimmy Buffett suite. So we were up there hanging out with Jimmy. He was checking out the room, and I go, hey, we got to shoot this video, man. You got a moment? He's like, yeah, sure. And Jay was nice enough to send us some, and his staff, some Blackhawks hats, jersey. But then there were two other things. There was a Caner jersey for Jimmy to sign for silent auction for Friday night, as well as a Blackhawks helmet. And Jimmy goes, no, I'm wearing the helmet. I'm going, all right, dude. And that's just kind of the way he is. So it turned out to be a fun video.
For as the coolest guy. That's it. That's why. It's a very cool thing. And for everybody that loves Buffett, and you know how big a Chicago town or a Buffett town Chicago is, I should say. It's going to be
absolutely
a lot of fun.
Yes.
And I understand you're going to be here.
I'm going to be there. I'm flying in today. I've got my Blackhawks jersey ready to go. I've also got something else. I've got some Hawaiian lays to keep me in that warm zen frame of mind for the hockey game.
Right.
With that, what'd you guys say today? Is it 14 degree wind chill up there?
Yeah, but it feels like 15. So we got that going for us.
It's about the layers you wear, right? And
exactly.
If I get a chance to have a couple margaritas, I think I'll be good to go.
Tell Jimmy we said hi, and everybody in the band, Mike and the guys as well, and thanks for doing this.
I will definitely tell Jimmy, Mr. Utley, and go Blackhawks.
All right, buddy. Thank you. That's Hickey Larson, production coordinator for the Buffett Coral Reefer Band, and a big Friday night. What time should people get there?
They should get there. Well, the atrium opens at 4. The game is at 6:30, though, so they should plan on. It's a real happy hour feel.
You got a Margaritaville tequila question of
I
some
do,
sort here?
Because I am going to give away a pair of tickets to the Blackhawks Convention presented by Magellan Corporation. Passes are on sale now for the 12th annual convention that takes place at the Hill in Chicago this July 26th through the 28th.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Let's shift to some money here. David Hochberg's here. Team Hochberg now has a new home. Where are you guys located now?
We're over at Homeside Financial.
Okay, how's that working out?
Outstanding. We've been there since the beginning of the year.
And you must be freezing. He is sitting in a winter jacket, and his hands are like plunged in the pockets tightly.
Well, at his age, he gets a chill.
Things start going to hell when you cross over 50. Yeah.
Here's the deal. The Dow's down 100. The S&P's off 12 or 13. The NASDAQ's down 46. So not a great start to the market today. What's it doing to mortgage rates?
Mortgage rates are up a little bit today. The Philadelphia Fed released some negative information on jobs.
That was an Elton John song. Wasn't it Philadelphia Fed?
Yeah, Philadelphia Fed, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were drinking a lot in the 70s, and you're a big Elton John fan, I understand. No, but...
child.
No, Philadelphia Freedom, that would be, Mr. Cochran.
Oh, sorry.
Sounds similar. But listen, it's still good. Rates are still in the fours. Everything's good. We helped out. Can I just give an example of a listener who's listening right now that we helped save about $1,100 a month?
If I said no, would it matter?
No, I'm just going to continue through the stop sign. So a lady called us. She owed about $145 on her mortgage. She owed about $180 on her student loans.
By the way, that's thousand, not dollars.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars. And she took out student loans for her son to go to college. And long story short, there's a program that enables us to roll in her student loans into her mortgage and not be a cash-out refinance. Long story short, we're going to do exactly that and save this lady almost $1,100 a month.
So it's hard for people to wrap their heads around that, right? Because they go, I owe this much money.
Yeah.
Why would I put everything together because it feels like I'm going to take on another debt when, in fact, what you're doing is consolidating?
Correct. I mean, listen, if it's coming out of your left pocket, your mortgage, and your right pocket, your student loan, it's coming out of the same pants, right? And Justin's got a new pair of pants, and they look fantastic,
Thank
Justin.
You, buddy.
But, you know, if we could...
You've changed.
Me?
Well, you see, he recognizes fashion when he sees it.
I think those look tremendous.
The whole denim conversation is like a full
by your
segment.
Poofy bear's coat. All
this is my Uline free jacket that I spent $1,500 on boxes, and I got a free bear's jacket.
That's
my
great.
Wife hates it.
Yeah,
that's why I wear it.
And
it's very comfortable. It's awesome.
It's
she
very
hates
fashionable.
It. She's like, I hate that jacket. I'm like, yeah, I don't care.
It's I like your wife. She's very delightful.
I know everybody does.
Yeah, she's great.
Thank God for her.
But the idea is pants. The idea is that
monthly payments.
To allow the professionals, you, Team Hochberg, to have an opportunity to assess your situation, and then you have to listen to the answer.
Right. And then you have to agree that, yes, you might be going up a little bit in an interest rate, and yes, you're going up in a mortgage payment by maybe $68 a month, but you're eliminating all of this stuff over here, $1,200 to $1,300 worth of student loans.
Yeah, your net gain's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good day. And then what we told the, explained to the WGN listener, we said, listen, you could take that money, build an emergency fund, you're not getting any younger, okay? Or you could take that money and maybe plow it back into your 30-year fixed loan that we put them into, or maybe you take that money and fix up the home that you plan on selling in the next five
maybe
to 7 years.
Maybe you head out to Kohl's and get some jeans like Justin did.
It's Kohl's.
Kohl's.
It was a fashion.
They look tremendous.
Thank you. It's European.
Yeah. One of the reasons that that David Hochberg and Team Hochberg are good is because he can say to a client, you're not getting any younger.
Yeah.
And they still want to be a customer.
Well, it's a fact, right? I mean, she's 66, 67.
She's 66. Even better.
Yeah. I mean, she's a nice lady. And her husband is, retired, disabled. And they might need that extra $1,000 around the house to do a little work to make it more comfortable for her husband to maneuver around the home. Maybe buy a van to get him around. Who knows? It's just, it frees up that cash flow that they could take that money and invest it elsewhere, or they could take that money and put it back in the mortgage or pay the mortgage down faster, or put an emergency fund for a God forbid moment.
New Pants has a question for you.
Yes.
David, the story that's anecdotally coming out about the new tax plan and people going to their accountants or going to TurboTax, whether they use,
sure,
and not getting the kind of refund that they're used to, does that affect the mortgage?
Sure.
How does that affect you? Because obviously this is when people get big cash payouts and they want to do different things with it.
Yeah, well, it impacts us because a lot of those people who were expecting gigantic refunds, right, and then using that refund to pay their Hanukkah bills or their holiday bills or their Christmas or Kwanzaa bills, the money's not there. Okay, so what does that do? That puts added pressure. We were talking about during the break about what's considered the middle class nowadays. Back in the days in the 70s when I was a kid, the middle class, the mom and dad each had a job and they worked and they brought home 25 grand a year, maybe 28, 30, and you had a combined income of 50 to 60, you were doing all right, right?
What's middle class now? 60 apiece?
60 apiece, exactly. If you're not making 120 G's a year now, living in a major metropolitan area, You're barely getting by. Two, three kids, two cars, every type of camp, right? Johnny's got to be on travel hockey. Has to go to Detroit to play three games in two nights, and you got to drive them. You got to feed them. You got to equip them. You got to be up at the... I'm just telling you, it's $5,000, and these people don't have the money. They're putting it on their credit card, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000.
And they're putting themselves behind the financial eight ball, aren't they, David?
Yeah.
Is that exactly what they're doing?
Yeah, then they have to... It's great for our business, because then they have to come to us to help us get you out of the trouble that... that we put you into, that you've gotten yourself into, but the equity in your home is still typically the cheapest amount of money that you have to borrow in order to go and pay off your debt.
Yeah.
And it is what it is. Listen, the middle class today is not $60,000. It might be in Nashville, okay, where you can buy a $300,000 home and pay $1,200 in real estate taxes. You buy a $300,000 home here, it's 9-10 G's. Okay, in some areas, out in McHenry, thank God for Jack Franks out there. He's doing something. I wish he would move to Cook County and run for county board in Cook County and lower our taxes here. Jack's doing a great job, McHenry.
You think if you took your jacket off, your blood pressure would be
I think if I breathe, I'd be okay. It's amazing. I should like take up scuba diving without a tank. You notice how many words I could get out with one breath?
The fact that you continue doing three or four paragraphs without stopping is quite
amazing. I'm quite impressed with myself.
Well, we've talked about this. I mean, obviously, in Illinois, we are affected big time by the salt, by the not being able
absolutely
to deduct taxes.
We're a blue state.
But does that hurt the mortgage industry because people before were saying, I'll take on a jumbo loan,
sure,
or I'll take on whatever because I can write it off. Now they can't.
They can't write it off. You know, if you're in an area where you can't write it off, of course it's going to impact the housing. Here, genius is down at the county, okay? Here's a news break, all right? Here's a news break, Tony Preckwinkle. For every $520 a month you increase somebody's property tax, you just lopped off 100 G's worth of real estate value. Because that's what it costs to pay a $100,000 mortgage. All right, Tony? Okay, all you board members, whatever the hell you do there, all 16, 18 of you voting on soda taxes and everything, why don't you take a trip out to see Jack Franks out in McHenry and see what Jack's doing? Okay, and see how Jack is dropping real estate taxes out there in McHenry by 10%. What am I missing here?
You should probably go to Justin's jeans dealer and get something a little roomier as well.
God, but you'd have to, I'd have to buy two pairs and sew them together because he's a little thinner than I am.
What time is it? It's 9:49. I had to carry the two. More with David Hochberg in just a second. Stand by for that. We're going to give him another IV and make sure that he's okay.
I'm sweating here. I got to take this jacket off from you.
Before we get to word from Steve on what's coming up at 10, just want to repeat a big sports story, Mark Carmen, that came up earlier this morning. Legendary Syracuse head basketball coach Jim Boeheim had something awful happen last night, which was?
Yeah, Jim Boeheim was driving home late at night. There was a car accident. Jim Boeheim struck and killed a 51-year-old man walking on a highway.
Just outside of Syracuse.
Yeah. Jorge Jimenez was the name. He had been in the car with three others. Boeheim struck Jimenez while trying to avoid the vehicle. He was taken to a hospital where he was pronounced dead. Jim is 74 years old. He's cooperating with the investigation.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
A lot of text messages coming in about Hochberg. Love listening to David. 815. David should really move to McHenry County.
I should be on more. I think it should be on every week. What do you think?
630, so glad you got this infomercial in. Shameless.
Shameless.
Shameless what? That I'm upset about property taxes?
No, there's no shame here. No shame, please.
Switch to DK.
There's a lot of people out there who are really supporting you, and only a handful that find you really annoying.
That's like in my house. So it works out. it's like Northbrook.
Yeah. Question I get all the time. I mean, all day long.
Yes.
All right, that might be a slight exaggeration. But people want to know, what in your world has the biggest impact on credit rating? Is it a refi? Is it a reverse mortgage? Is it a credit adjustment move? What?
What? Impacting your credit rating?
Yes.
Is not making any payments on something. That you really want to kick in the head? Blow off a couple of credit card payments, a car loan, and a mortgage will really impact you. If you really want to...
And literally, a one day late on a mortgage is a problem.
If you go past the 15th of the following month, right? Mm. So...
Mm.
Well, no.
I know this is your business. But one day late on a mortgage payment is usually a ding.
If you make January's on February 1st, Here comes the 545 Metra freight train, right?
Right,
I mean, Metra and freight train are two different things, but you understand.
Yeah, but good analogy.
It's a very fast freight train. If Metra ran freight trains, it would be very fast and very efficient.
Pants.
Right. But what I'm saying is that if you pay January on February 1st, that is a no-no. If you pay January on January 28th, you're going to get hit with a late fee, but it's still paid in the month. You're okay.
Right.
Right? It's not going to mark down as a late. How we've helped enhance people's credit and listeners' credit is by taking that debt that they have, taking the equity out of their home, which they've gotten back over the past 4, 5, 6 years because of the home evaluations have gone up, and using that liquidity to pay off debt while keeping the credit cards open. That way your credit scores go back up. And then we helped thousands of people do that over the years.
And we know the student loan bubble and the auto loan bubble is a huge problem. And if either one of them burst, it's 2007, 2008 again.
But, listen, you've got... I feel bad for these college kids. I really do. We're pulling credit reports. These college kids want to buy a home, $200,000 worth of student loan debt, $2,000-$3,000 a month, and they're making $60,000 a year. They're never going to be able to get out of their parents' basement. It's a travesty. It's disgusting what this government is doing, and what companies are doing to kids. It's ridiculous.
You are a full-fledged red meat eating capitalist.
Yes.
The movement in Washington, when you hear some people who want to be the next president of the United States and others and who are talking about perhaps free college.
How are you going to pay for it?
But the idea, when you are here railing against some of the things that put people in debt and how the government and everyone else is kind of moving in a direction to really screw over the little guy, what do you think about the idea of trying to find different ways to level the playing field?
I think it's great. I think that look what happened with student loan debt, and look what happened with the housing craziness that happened between 01 and 06, 07, then everything collapsed, right? It was a 48-inch water main in the real estate industry. If you had a pulse, you could get a mortgage and everything. Everybody was getting mortgages, and then everything stopped. Right. For some reason, we took that model, which we know failed. Right. We have empirical data
07 to 2009 that wasn't a good system and the whole system collapsed, right? We've all experienced it. Right.
The entire world economy was on
almost,
the break.
It was teetering on collapse.
That's
so what
not
do we
an
do?
Exaggeration.
We take that model and then instead of giving it to 21 to 80 year olds in the real estate market, we turn it on its head and position it to 18 year old little Johnny and Sally graduating high school that have no idea what they're going to do, what they want to do. They have an idea, but they're in their formidable years, right? And we're going to load them up with 50 to 60 G's a year.
Because it makes money.
Right.
Right.
So we've got all this money coming into the system.
They had to find a new way to make money.
And what happens? You have all this money coming into the system. Same thing happened in the real estate. Real estate prices shot up. 60 grand to go to college? Really?
A year.
60 grand to go to college for a year. I talked to a guy, he's got a kid going to MIT. We're going to refinance his house in Northbrook, do an interest-only loan. $67,000
right.
a year to go to MIT,
well,
great
University
school.
Of Chicago, Northwestern.
It's ridiculous. 70
grand a year.
It's ridiculous. And these kids are going to graduate with $80,000 to $100,000 a year jobs, with $240,000 with the student loan debt. And I, you know, at least to get a mortgage, we need your Social Security number. We need to verify income, verify assets, verify credit. Student loan, 18. You got a 23 on your SAT or ACT, 31 on your ACT. Here's $250,000. Go do what you want. It's a ridiculous system.
Texter says my daughter and her fiance have just come out of bankruptcy.
Okay.
Is it still possible for them to get a mortgage, or do they
Absolutely.
Have to wait a certain amount of time, and how long?
There are programs one day out of bankruptcy. If they've reestablished credit
wow.
and have a down payment, 20% down, there's some non QM lenders out there, qualified mortgage lenders out there that we could send them into.
Average time length would be what?
Average time length, chapter 13, 1 year with an FHA, chapter 13, 1 day out for a VA, chapter 13, 2 years out for conventional, chapter 7. 2 years for VA, FHA, and 4 years conventional. But there are other options out there with slightly higher
That's
interest
why
rate.
You got to talk to a professional.
That's why you got to give us a call, Team Hochberg, and we'll talk straight.
Last word from you.
I'm very happy to be here. I'm very happy that the Blackhawks are winning. I'm
Do
very
you think
happy
Mark
to be
Mark Carmen should be involved in his own wedding planning?
I think Mark Carmen should just be lucky that she said yes and like stay the hell out of the way and show up whenever the date is and try not to screw this up.
Right.
She looks like a beautiful
bad
attitude.
Beautiful girl.
I've known you for how long? 10 years?
Long time.
Okay, I'm just saying. You got a better shot of making it to the altar if you just stay out of the way and let her handle it.
Yeah. I love your advice on everything but this. I trust you on all finances.
Go play some tennis with Bill Leff over here. Stay out of it. Watch the U.S. Open and let her handle everything. You're not going to have any say in anything anyway, so why aggravate yourself?
You can come with
people, how do people get a hold of you?
It's very simple.
For marriage advice.
For marriage advice, marriage counseling, kids. Yeah. I'm great with kids.
Yeah.
I do kids parties, Little League coaching. You could go to 85.
You're great at kids' birthday parties and bar mitzvahs. It's really great entertainment.
And I'm very affordable. 855-56-DAVID, or you go to 56david.com. I've got something huge that I'm working on right now, super huge, that I can't announce it,
okay,
but I'm just going to tell
Eddie.
You it's huge.
Yeah, Crazy Eddie will come back and tell us about that as soon as he can.
Yes.
Bill and Wendy coming up, 720 WGN, Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is where Steve will be next. Bill and Wendy are here, and Bill and Wendy are...
David scared me.
What happened?
He just scared me.
Yeah, it's understandable. He is frightened.
He's over-exuberant.
Carmen, I haven't had time to ask you this all day. Mark Carmen, thank you for filling in again today. Is Annette back tomorrow?
He is, Steve. Okay. Appreciate you having me.
I'm out tomorrow.
That's right, because you have your big show. Well,
big
plug
show,
your show.
The big Schadenfreude show, the 20th anniversary show at the Hideout, Friday night, sold out. But the
Did you go with the second show, as I advised?
It is a secret show, Steve.
Oh, okay.
Those guys are good, Steve.
The last thing you want is an audience finding out about it.
No, you know, we've had a lot of success over 20 years' time, and a lot of great people have come out and become friends, and they became loyal. And so what we did is we did an invite-only to a lot of people who were there at the beginning in 1999, and it sold out in seconds. It was once the email went out, so
that's tremendous.
We're giving a pizza
perform?
And beer.
I've not.
Like
incredibly innovative.
Really?
Yeah.
Incredibly.
In 99. Cool. Now, not so much.
So 99, I would have really enjoyed
in
it.
In 99, you were like, this is very innovative.
In 2019, if I come,
like,
I'm going to go, come on,
old
man.
News. You've seen it before.
You're doing a lot of Al Gore material? Is that what's happening?
There's a lot of Chumbawamba, and there's a lot of Smash Mouth references.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of,
well, have fun.
Y2K.
You get a review on Monday for it?
Yeah, I'll let you know, so thanks.
Okay, well, have fun.
See you guys on Monday.
Mark Carmen, yesterday we talked a lot about the fact that you have unreasonable expectations of being involved in your own wedding.
Those are your words, Steve.
What did your fiance say when you got home?
She didn't listened to the show yesterday, Steve, so I survived. But she normally does it, but there was stuff going on.
Yeah, because she likes me, right?
She's a huge fan. Yeah, yeah. Huge fan. Wants you to officiate the wedding, come to the wedding. Yeah. Maybe, you know, I don't know.
Because you're such a sports guy, my plan would be to officiate it. I'd wear a referee's uniform and I'd call penalties.
That would work. I'm down. But she said that anything I say, she completely supports. She wants to partner, Steve. It was, you know, really nice conversation.
Anything you say.
Well, it's all about, yes, we're on the team, yeah. Steve.
So
ridiculous. Two words, goal horn. You want those for the reception.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Bill and Wendy are here.
Hello.
What are you guys doing today?
The kids from Friends the Musical.
Oh, cool. Oh, good.
Yeah.
I've heard good things about it.
Yeah, it looks really good, doesn't it?
It's still one of the best shows on TV.
It's true. The writing in the last 5 years, tremendous.
Also,
no, I'm serious. The first 5 years, spot on.
Oh, I thought you meant 5 years.
Yeah, I did too currently. I'm like, currently. They're still making it?
Also,
I wish they were.
The kids from SVU, the musical.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's good too.
That'll be fun to talk
That'll
to.
That'll be a lot of fun.
What we found on the ground under the body.
God, it makes me miss Cop Rock just thinking about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Botchko.
See you tomorrow.